Yeah, frat gear is good as own billiard room.
Yes, it's what do you call it, Kramer?
Billiard room.
No, not billiard. Not the billiards. It was
billiards room.
Come on already. Come on. We call it the
Place to be.
The place to be. Yes, the place to be.
Then I shall be there.
Now, it's time. Live and in living color.
The Grandy Man can.
Time to play the game.
Well, you always left me satisfied and smiling, so.
That's what she said.
Why do I want this? I want to make bank, bro. I want to get ass. I want to drive a Range Rover.
Place to be Nation, Scott Criscola and Justin Rosero. This is the Place to Be Podcast.
Very nice, Mr. Criscola.
Oh, I'm sorry, Dennis.
If it keeps on raining, that is going to break.
Place to Be Nation, welcome to another great episode of the one and only Place to Be podcast. I am your co-host, Justin Rosero. We are emanating deep in from... I'm just going to let it run. I think people will enjoy the screw-up. We're going to do this again, we'll do it again. I never fucked that up. That's twice now. All right, Place to Be Nation, I am your co-host, Justin Rosero, from deep inside the Place to Be Man Cave. It is the Place to Be podcast. And with me, as always, is Scott Criscola. Scott, how you doing?
Maybe the next time you shouldn't do it at Sepazio speed, and maybe you'll be all right.
I'll have to slow down a little bit. This is what happens when we do a show the night before, and we're up into the wee hours editing, and then the baby decides to eat at 4:30 instead of 5:30.
Oh, God. Well, anyway, it is always good to talk to you, JR, and welcome, everyone, to the Place to Be podcast, number 136. We're only 64 episodes away from 200. Wow.
Still a ways to go.
It is, but still, I mean... Breakneck speed is what we do here, Place to Be Podcast, for all of you, PTB Nation. It is, of course, the summer. Summer officially started yesterday, although, boy, it came in with a bang, that's for sure. Hotter than God knows what. So it makes sense that tonight, well, last night we did a show on the beach, and tonight we will do another legendary show from this time.
Hey, what is going on here?
When are you ever going to learn? It's every Thursday, or sometimes Friday, but you should be gone by Friday. Get out of the way. Tonight, inside the always ominous vintage vault, we're going to combine two things that usually don't go together. Boiler rooms and bikinis.
The monsters. They wear many masks in our world. Some are deranged, psychotic beings, unaware of the insanity that festers within. Others are brutal, ruthless assailants, executioners of a sinister plan. The Monster Slayers. They too are varied and unique. Shawn Michaels, the WWF champion, yields 200 pounds to the beast known as Vader. But he counters with guile, superb athleticism, and the courage of a gallant champion. And then there's the Undertaker, the mysterious light in a world of darkness. To exorcise the demon mankind, he cannot rely upon convention. In this cold, unforgiving battleground, he must embrace the horror to defeat it. For the monsters to be abolished, David must slay Goliath. The Reaper must claim another damned soul. But good doesn't always triumph over evil. Sometimes victory eludes heroics. Sometimes the horror lives on. From beautiful, historic Cleveland, Ohio, home of the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, majestic Jacobs Field, and the spectacular new Gund Arena, Supersize Stridex Pads presents WWF SummerSlam. Welcome everyone to Cleveland, Ohio!
Lots of guile in the air tonight.
Yes, that was a very unusual word to stick in there. Guile.
Lots of guile.
Where do they get the... You know, they got to find the guy that used to write these opens and use them now.
Right,
these opens are awesome.
Yeah, they are.
Very nice. For, as of course you know, tonight on the Place to Be Podcast's Vintage Vault, we give you SummerSlam 1996.
For beautiful, beautiful downtown Cleveland.
That was good.
Well, the Gund Arena just opened, correct?
Yes. Well, I'm sure you probably have it now as we'll go through. But this is one of those shows. I tell you, JR, this is going to be one of those shows that I'm looking forward to the feedback, because I bet you some people think the show's good, and I bet you other people think the show sucks. So I'm looking forward to it, because this is one of those ones that could go either way, depending on your point
of view. Well, I got a spoiler for you, Scotty.
You do?
I liked it.
So, wow, what a shock.
There's a spoiler.
Yes. I'll give you my opinion. Sorry, Mr. President. Is he on this show? I don't think so. I don't think we see him on camera on the show.
He's wielding from the ivory towers.
That is correct. After looking up at it for so many years with the
Coke bottle
always
glasses.
Exciting Jack Tunney. All right. August 18th, 1996. Live from, as mentioned, the Gund Arena in beautiful Cleveland, Ohio. The first pay-per-view in the Buckeye State outside of Richfield. And again, the Gund Arena, one of the newer venues. I'm sure JR has it in front of him. What is the history of the Gund Arena?
Opened October 17th, 1994.
Okay.
So a couple of years prior to the show. Mm-hmm. Construction cost $100 million. Nowadays, it would be $157 million. Mm-hmm. Factor in inflation.
Yes.
The tenants are your Cleveland Cavaliers.
Yep.
The AHL's Lake Erie Monsters.
Yes, I've seen them.
The AFL's Cleveland Gladiators.
Aha, a little arena football action. Very nice.
The now defunct WNBA Cleveland Rockers. Marginetti, I believe, played for them. The AHL's defunct Cleveland Barons.
I remember them, too. Wow, they go way back. Wow.
The IHL's defunct Cleveland Lumberjacks. And the LFL's. Is that the Lingerie League? Yes, it is. The Lingerie Football League's Cleveland Crush. Still play there now.
There's actually, like, city teams.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. On December 6, 2010, the Lingerie Football League announced that the Quicken Loans Arena would become the home of the Cleveland Crush. And, of course, Quicken Loans is now the current name for the
yes.
Gund Arena.
Yes. And, of course, as...
this is the first pay-per-view there.
Yes. Yes,
and, Scott, here's a little Gund Arena trivia for you.
Uh-huh.
Do you know who performed the first concert there on October 17th? 1994, just a couple weeks before the Cavs played their first game.
I'm going to say, let's see, 1994, who was touring? Well, I'm going to say Aerosmith.
Nope. I'll give another couple guesses. Go ahead.
Okay. Because they were touring, the Get a Grip album was out. Stone Temple Pilots?
Nope.
No. Where was I closer with? Was I closer with Aerosmith or Stone Temple Pilots in terms of, like, genre of the band?
Neither, really, but I guess Aerosmith.
Okay. Steve Miller Band.
No.
No? Bummer. Who?
Sergeant O'Leary is walking the beats. You know everything, Billy Joel. I figured you know that.
Oh, my God. No, you got to ask Dr. G. He would have pulled that out in 2 seconds. Okay. Oh, wow. The greatest. He was touring the River of Dreams album.
Kind of like LaRue pulls out in 2 seconds.
Yes, I saw that conversation. I forgot who he was having. Probably Greenhouse, knowing him. Ah, so the great Billy Joel. I was going to say the great BJ, but that would go along with the 2 seconds. Anyway, yes. Yeah, no, if you ask Dr. G that, he'd give you that in about 2 seconds. All right.
Also, one of the little final fun fact, it's the site of Rush's DVD shoot, 2010-2011 Time Machine Tour.
Well, you know what I was going to say Rush is one of my guesses, so that would have been pretty interesting.
Do you know why they chose Cleveland?
Rock and Roll Hall of Fame?
It was the first U.S. city to give the band any radio airplay.
Oh, yes. That is correct. 70s. Yes. Yeah. Yes. If you see, I forgot about this. Yes. If you watch their documentary that came out last year, yes, one of the actually most legendary classic rock stations in was in Cleveland. Yeah. They got, you know, not to go into it too much, but Rush was this like artsy, progressive Canadian band from Toronto in the Woodland Hills. And, you know, one of their first kind of EPs showed up at this Cleveland rock station, and the morning guy or the midday guy played it, and history was made. They're one of the greatest power trios of all time. But, yes, Billy Joel was obviously doing the River of Dreams tour. It's funny that our esteemed narrator mentioned Jacobs Field because, of course, the Cleveland Indians were the defending American League champions.
I know that had opened, what, the year before?
Yes, 90, yeah. And 94 during the strike year, I think it opened. And then, obviously, 95, the Indians would win their first of two out of three American League championships. By the way, at this point, JR, I think your Yankees were like 12 games up on the Orioles in the AL East in that summer of 90, that magical summer of 1996.
Very magical. Yes. Very magical. Maybe I'll have to, as we get closer to October, maybe I'll try and dig up my term paper I wrote in high school about why the Yankees would win the World Series at the beginning of the playoffs. And I got an A. I got an A because he said, well, you were right. It was supposed to be like an argument paper. You know, you had to convince whatever, someone of something. And that was my conviction.
Persuasive paper, right.
And he's like, well, you were right. I mean, you obviously won the argument because they won the World Series. So
I'll have to find some old school John Sterling quips.
Yeah, bust out a lot of stats and all different kinds of things.
Oh, that's tremendous. Speaking of Cleveland, a hotbed for everything, including wrestling, an attendance of 17,000. Yes. Great crowd, JR.
Yeah,
great.
Filled the Gund Arena, the beautiful Gund Arena. They filled it.
Yes. I want to double check our good friend Graham Cawthon on the history of WWE.com. The paid crowd was 14,926.
Yeah, it's a little papered.
But that's fine. Still a great crowd.
Yeah, for them at this time, definitely. You know what I always think of, though, when I think of Gund Arena in 1996? Those hideous Cavs uniforms they had in the mid-90s with the blue and orange and the...
Oh, yeah.
Ugh, gross.
Those uniforms go back to the 80s, those ones.
Not those.
No?
The ones after that. They're like black with like blue stripe kind of. Look it up quick online. I like the classic ones. The orange and blue classics are great.
Yes. Okay. Yeah. They didn't get to the maroon until LeBron got there, right?
Right. This is in between the two. It was like I always picture Sean Kemp's fat ass in it when he got traded to Cleveland.
Oh, I know you. That's right. They used to call him a juicy fruit. That's right.
they were ugly as sin.
Yeah. So was he. All right. Your buy rate, 0.58, which actually, I know we don't talk about buy rates, but that's actually not bad, 0.58. Your announced team, you heard him as always, Mr. Play-by-Play himself, Vincent Kennedy McMahon. Good old, I don't know, why don't we haven't, they haven't called him that yet, good old JR.
No, it's closing in, another few months.
Yeah, Jim Ross. And in the seat, because the king, Jerry Lawler, obviously involved in the... show is not doing commentary. So who has returned?
Now Lou, nobody called anyone a JT.
That would be the one and only Mr. Perfect.
Yes, Mr. Perfect has returned for the first time since the Rumble. Seen the Rumble? Yeah, he was at the Rumble, right?
I think that was the last time he commented. He did some backstage interviews here and there, but
and of course he was the referee, the guest outside referee at King of the Ring. So, all right, so we jack up the Gund Arena, and the free for all match, is where I get my first tick down on this show. Why don't you let everyone know what the free for all match is?
Well, in an odd turn, we have Stone Cold Steve Austin battling Yokozuna, which is actually kind of a cool match. When you think of it on paper, why it's on the pre-show and only gets 2 minutes, I'm not sure. We talked about this at King of the Ring and how everyone just assumed the Austin push, you know, skyrocketed right off the King of the Ring win. But he obviously was downplayed a bit. I think it's because they had a feud in mind for him, and we'll see that to start to pop up next month. And they just couldn't do it yet. So I think they just kind of, you know, we talked about how they already had a guy in place in Vader in the main event scene, and there really wasn't much else to do with Austin, so they just kind of let him simmer a little. So here he beats Yoko, and Yoko goes to the bonsai drop, but he weighs too much, he's too fat, and the rope actually breaks in his grip, and he falls backwards, and Austin just pins him. So not even a convincing win for Austin, which is kind of surprising as well.
Yeah, that was weird. Why don't they just, I mean, was it the sat window? I mean, there's no need to take this off the show. I don't get it. Could have put it.
Well, they announced it ahead of time, so I mean, I don't really know what the I don't know the reasoning, but you know, the highlight is backstage he gives Todd Pengel some shit when he tries to interview him, so that was kind of the only real true Stone Cold moment we get. But also on this pre-show, we had a bikini blast off, which was Sable, Sonny, and Marlena were like in a wading pool backstage, and Pengel was involved, and T.L. Hopper, a couple other guys, were involved in the skits. And originally it was supposed to be the bikini showdown between Sonny and Cloudy, which we talked about last show. But thankfully, that was switched.
Yes. I was just puzzled by that. I didn't understand. Mm-hmm. I mean, the blast off was great. The whole thing was they're supposed to do something with Cloudy originally. Thank God. Thank God they didn't do that. That would have ended badly. So here we go. Let's fire it up. The show begins. It is 8 o'clock, or is it still 7 o'clock?
7 still.
7 o'clock on this Sunday night. Were you watching it live, JR?
I was.
I was not. This was the 2 year stretch, or the middle of the 3 year stretch, 94, 95, 96, that I did not watch SummerSlam live. I picked it up again the following year and did not miss since. All right, let's get to our opener. And actually, just a good, solid opening match. Fairly long. And after taking a month off in June, actually in July too, or not July, May, and then coming back in July in the main event, the Rocket, the King of Hearts, Owen Hart, back in into the show, and he opens against Savio Vega. And obviously, what we love about this is, in homage to Ace Cowboy Bob Orton, Owen Hart still rocking the cast on his arm from the break that he had in May.
Yeah, well, still a great angle.
I don't know if we remember talking about this. Who actually broke it again? I think we may have talked about it at Beware of Dog, but
it was in a match with I thought it was Mero.
I think you're right. I think it might be Mero. I'm pretty sure we talked about it at Beware of Dog, but I just want to make sure. But anyway, it should obviously be off by now. And really, I mean, what's funny is, and this is not a knock on these two guys, but I don't see why you had to have Austin on the pre-show and give this match 13 minutes. Mm. Again, not a knock on either guy. And actually, I like this match.
I do, too. I thought it was a pretty good opener.
I think it was a great opener. But it didn't have to be 13 minutes. You could have given this 7 and given Austin and Yoko 7. And I think it'd be perfectly fine. Very weird. I still that kind of bugs. That irks me for some reason every time we talk about, every time I think of this show. But nothing to take away from this match. It's a very, very good match. It's Owen.
Would you put Austin Yoko on the main card, though, and had it end the way it did, or would you have Austin kind of win more cleanly? Like, I feel like they got away with that finish because it was on the pre-show. It's kind of a hokey finish to do, and if you're going to have it on pay-per-view.
Well, no, I would have booked it differently and had him win clean. I mean, obviously, Yoko was, towards the end of the line, and he would have been here to really put Austin over. I think they should have booked it differently. Who says it had to end that way? I mean, that ending was dumb. I don't know who came up with it, but I would definitely not have done that if it was on the real show, and there was real no need to. As for this match, it was just very well done. I mean, two solid guys. Overall, and we'll talk more about this because he's obviously around for quite a while. What was your impressions at this point of Savio as part of the mid-card? I mean, was he a guy that you guys all liked, you and the West Warwick Mafia? You guys dig Savio? Do you have any Savio?
I think I was kind of ambivalent to him at the time. I don't think I really started to appreciate him till later on. Mm-hmm. Solid mid-card guy. Very reminiscent of Tito Santana, kind of after 89 when he was just, on the card. You knew he'd get a good match. You knew he'd sell, make us come back, and put the heel over. That's pretty much what Savio was at this point, and he was fine at it. I thought his selling was good. His comebacks were good. And, he knew how to take moves at a beating, and Owen was able to lay that on him. And I really enjoyed this match. I think it's a solid opener. And Owen kind of needed this win. He hadn't done much on pay-per-view since early in the year. He was in the main event last month, but he was kind of the sixth man. He was kind of the forgotten guy of that match. Mm-hmm. He's just kind of been Bulldog and Vader's lackey over the last couple of months. So he kind of needed a standout singles win to get himself rejuvenated a little, especially with what's to come in the fall with him. So I think this was almost needed more than Austin was. Austin was still going to be hot, and he had the big King of the Ring win anyway. Owen needed a good pay-per-view win like this. And Savio still had pretty decent name value. It's not like he was looked at as a bum. I mean, he was winning enough matches on TV and evolving enough feuds that this win meant something. So, also, after the match, a guy we still haven't talked about, next month, finally, we will, Justin Hawk Bradshaw comes out and attacks Savio, setting up their feud to continue. So I like this. I thought it was a good opener.
Yeah, I do too. Owen, you're right. I think Owen was due. I mean, he hadn't really done much really since losing to Sean in February. He'd kind of been kind of floating around and being part of things. He was in Camp Cornette, but he hadn't been really singled out for anything special. Then he injured his arm and then sold that. And, of course, he had his Slammy, or it should have been Slammy award-winning commentary at King of the Ring. But it's good to have him back in the flow and a nice win here. So good opener. I gave it 3. You actually graded it higher than you did. That doesn't happen often for this era. But a big win for Owen. Savio was game. It was a really fun match. One of those forgotten matches. If you have this show, you know, at least watch that match. I mean, pop the whole thing in. We'll talk more about the whole show, obviously, as we go on. But that's a great opener. Mm-hmm. I enjoy that one. So Owen Hart with a big win to open the show against Savio Vega. All right, next up, we actually have a first in World Wrestling Federation history. It is also our first title match of the night.
Hogan, we're coming for you, nigga!
And you're not in it. I don't know how well that would have gone over in beautiful Cleveland.
Yes, sir.
Probably not.
Yeah.
The Smoking Guns are your, of course, World Wrestling Federation Tag Team Champions. But now it seems like, JR, and we're going to talk about it shortly, we've kind of been shatting all over the tag division in 1996. So here's what they do. They throw everybody that's considered a team into one match. So for the first time in World Wrestling Federation history, we have the first ever four-way match.
And this, to me, was like the culmination of this lame tag division. Like, these four teams have really been the only four teams in the mix since, like, what, February, March-ish?
Pretty
and
much.
This kind of eliminates them all. You know, like they all kind of stick around in one way or the other, but except for one team. But they the change of the guard happens here. We have a new team gets in the mix next month, and then a couple more come in towards the end of the year. So to me, this is like the end of the summer of 96 blah tag division, with the Godwins being the main, you know, foils, and you have the Body Donnas and the New Rockers kind of floating around on the outside as well. So this is it for the Body Donnas, though. Chris Candido, Skip, had fractured his vertebrae the previous week at Madison Square Garden. He actually even has a neck collar on during the match. He barely even doesn't even tag in. They'd hang around for the next TV tapings, but he wouldn't make it to October. Final record, 4-2, the 2-0 at their free-for-all matches. So a decent little, pretty much a one-year run almost. Not even, about 8 months for the Body Donnas, and just about a year for Skip on his own. So that's it. Sonny will stick around, but the Body Donnas are no more.
It's unfortunate, too, because obviously Chris Candido, one of the more accomplished wrestlers, particularly in the indie circuit, he obviously cut his teeth for a couple of years in Smoky Mountain and you know, had some pretty good feuds going there. And again, you know, another guy who, I think this was still that Vince just outside of the behind the curtain kind of thing. Like, he never let a lot of these really talented guys in all the way. And I think Candido was one of those guys, and it's unfortunate. Tom Pritchard, he's just there. You throw him with a tag team partner, and he's fine. But Candido deserved better.
I mean, you know, he was a small guy, but this was during a time when small guys were kind of getting their due. So
yeah,
he, I don't know. I mean, he was an okay talker. You just look at him, and you don't picture WWF star. I mean, I know it's probably not the most popular opinion, but I think that had to do with it. And I just think there are a lot of guys out there that could do what he did. And do it maybe slightly better. But, I mean, he's a fine worker. I don't see him ever being more than he was in WWF. I think maybe he could have been better if he was just Chris Candido and he had Tammy Sitch by his side and they weren't skipping Sonny, you know, the fitness gurus. But so from here, he heads back to ECW, be part of the Revive Triple Threat.
Yes.
And he would hang there until 2000 when he went to WCW. And he hung out there pretty much until the end of 2000. Hung around for a couple years on the indie scene, went to TNA in 2005, and wrestled there until he passed away from a blood clot that he suffered after surgery on his broken ankle.
He was actually managing the Naturals when he got hurt, which was who were the Naturals? Alex Shelley, right?
No,
somebody
it was,
else?
No, it wasn't that. It was Andy.
They ended
Douglas
up coming. They ended up coming to WWF. So
it was Andy Douglas and someone else.
Some other guys. Okay. Yeah. Anyway, yeah, he's managing the Naturals, and was right before the One Night Stand 05 pay-per-view.
Right. Well, he
passed away.
Yeah, and he broke his it was Andy Douglas and Chase Stevens.
But Chase
Stevens. He broke his tibia and fibula and dislocated his ankle during a steel cage match. So he fucked his leg all up. He had to get steel plates and screws put in. You know, he was told he was given only pain medication, not antibiotics, which normally should be given after surgery. And He actually was on the Impact tapings the next week when the Naturals won the tag titles. Remember, there's that one shot that they showed of him smiling with the belts and the wheelchair and the crutch, kind of that one last happy shot they show of him.
Yeah.
Fell ill. His condition got worse on April 28th. He collapsed, went to the hospital. He said he had pneumonia. Listen, I mean, pneumonia. And they drained his lungs, but he passed away soon after, age 33. So they said due to the blood clot. You know, no one knows. He had a heavy history of drug abuse, so no one knew if, you know, that played any role. Well, it doesn't seem like it. It seemed like a straight from the surgery, which is pretty tragic.
And we'll document Sonny when she's done. Mm-hmm. We won't get into it now, but obviously things changed with her personal life after that happened. But we'll get to that later on down the line. Anyway, so the smoking guns, they eliminate the body donors immediately.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Marty, I mean, Skip was a no condition to wrestle.
Yeah, so. he was in a neck brace and everything. Then the other team, as you mentioned, the Godwins, take out the New Rockers.
We haven't really talked much about them.
Yeah.
Marty Jannetty had come back, obviously, in late 95. And here he's teaming up with Al Snow, who is an indie stalwart, one of the most accomplished, well-schooled grapplers in the business at the time. New martial arts, shoot fighting, freestyle. Started in Midwest, in Ohio, actually, his home state, where we are tonight. Mm-hmm. Between November 86 and August 92, he captured 6 MCW, ICW, U.S. tag titles, 3 different partners. Moved to Smoky Mountain in 95, and that's where his career really started to pick up. Won the tag titles with Glenn Jacobs, and arrived in the WWF in October 95 with various masked personas. First, he was Avatar. I don't know if anyone remembers him. He was kind of a yellow outfit with a mask. And then he was Shinobi the Ninja. Yeah, so he kind of moved around in the late 95, early 96 in these couple of gimmicks. And then was repackaged as Leaf Cassidy, a dorky 70s child, and was joined up with Marty Jannetty as the New Rockers. So,
who really thinks of these fucking things? Leaf Cassidy, I mean, seriously.
It's kind of what, Leaf Garrett and David Cassidy, that was supposed to be the joke, I guess.
Yeah, but it just wasn't funny. But anyway.
And he had the feathered hair, and he kind of acted. And the whole thing was the Rockers were now like goofballs. They were straight up kind of dopey goofs.
Yeah.
But, you know, they were a good team. I thought they worked really well together. Obviously not the chemistry of the original Rockers, but it was pretty high. And, you know, they probably should have had them booked maybe a little more serious, and they could have had a pretty good tag feud with the Guns in place of maybe the Godwins during the summer.
Yeah. So they get pinned. Leaf Cassidy, the Partridge Family reject or whatever, yes. Like the Oliver of the Brady Bunch kind of thing. He gets pinned.
Of the Place to Be Nation.
Yes, pretty much. After the slop drop, and so we're down to the top two teams.
Again.
They go for another 5 minutes or so. And once again, Billy Gunn pins Phineas Ignatius Godwin.
This is Frank Costanza.
Maybe he could have had a tag team. And he gets pinned. Bart Gunn comes off the top rope with a double axe handle as Phineas hit the slop drop on Billy, but to no avail, and the Smoking Guns retain their World Wrestling Federation Tag Team Championships and essentially just bury the entire tag division.
Yeah, this was pretty much saying, hey, this is legit the best team. These other three are nothing. And the match is disjointed and sloppy, which I guess you'd expect. First time using this gimmick, and just four teams that are kind of just played out at this point. So it was nice to see them showcase the division. They just didn't have much to showcase. That's the problem.
Yeah, that's true. And maybe this is a chance to for them to kind of start from scratch. So the Smoking Guns continue on as your World Wrestling Federation Tag Team Champions. All right, next up, we have a straight-up big-time power singles match here. This is right up our alley, JR. Two big dudes, showcasing their power moves. The British Bulldog, former number one contender for the World Wrestling Federation title, taking on the returning in his first match in, about 9 months or so, Psycho Sid. And I don't know, this is interesting. I guess it's just a way to have Sid, you know, take out a member of Camp Cornette. By the way, in his career, this is Sid's only ever SummerSlam match.
We're going to be in a pool. We're going to be in a clubhouse. We're going to be all over that shuffleboard court.
I think I saw him when I was in Bermuda.
Oh, yeah?
I think I did. I think he was doing the limbo line. I think he mentioned CM Punk to me. I'm not sure. Anyway, so Sid comes in here, takes on the British Bulldog in a battle again of two big power guys. And a little over 6 minutes. And
all the skeptics and all the people have a little bit of... Let me do this again.
Oh, it's live, pal.
Sorry.
Well, you couldn't do the match again, but it wasn't bad.
No, I was okay, and I was actually kind of surprised. I mean, Bulldog's really fallen off a little bit here, from his run in the title picture and then coming off the main event at International Incident. And yeah, I mean, a clean loss in under 7 minutes to Sid is pretty surprising, but it makes sense. You know, they wanted to rebuild Sid, so just kind of odd that they sacrificed a Bulldog here. And I'm actually surprised they did things this way and didn't have Bulldog defeat Savio and Owen chop to Sid with the way the two had been booked. I mean, I'm not complaining with the way they chose, but right. I'm kind of surprised they didn't do things that way.
Yeah, I mean, you could have put anybody else in this role, but obviously, you know, the top baby faces feuding with the top heels. So Owen had already wrestled. Would you put Owen in this spot instead?
In Davey Boy's spot?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, that's what I was just saying, that I'm surprised they didn't. I mean, I don't think I would have, because I think Owen needed the win more than Davey Boy did.
Yeah, I was just confirming that. Yeah. I kind of think that there's really nothing else, nowhere else for Sid to go. Bulldog was really the only guy left. I think I would have made the match a little more competitive, but how much longer would you really have wanted it to be, you know?
No, I mean, they just didn't have the time to do it. I mean, it's whatever. It is what it is. It's fine. Bulldog's not going to be hurt that much by the loss.
No. No, and, you know, he's still in the top echelon of heels in the show.
Right.
And he's obviously not the top heel in Camp Cornette.
No, and he'll be rebuilt pretty quickly by next month. But Sid needed the win anyway, coming back. And kind of they really had big plans for him, as we'll see. So I think they needed to be sure that he'd be ready for what was ahead. So this is just a kind of a crowd-pleasing pop moment.
Right.
Sid gets the powerbomb, is actually kind of ugly, too. Sid kind of drops him. Bulldog like tries to break his fall with his arm and just kind of slams down hard on his shoulder.
Yeah, it's I don't know why people do that. Just you know, go with it. It's just so weird. I don't get it.
It was definitely odd. It seems like he's much more likely to bust something up by sticking your arm out halfway down. He's lucky he didn't snap it in half.
Yeah, exactly. So Sid gets the big win and continues his repackaging and repushing. And the other thing we just need to mention is that 1 year later and we're back to the Sid we all know. He's motivated. He's you know, he's getting the crowd going. He's jacked. He's excited. He's he definitely is the Sid that we all wanted him to be, instead of whatever the hell that shell of Sid that we saw in 1995.
It's amazing how much change 1 year can bring. You know, from Killer Ring 95 or from SummerSlam 95, where he's left off the card completely, all the way to this show here.
Yeah, absolutely. So big win for Sid. Hey, you brought him back, and we're all happy for it. So you shut up. So Sid gets the win. And Bulldog eats the pin. Not a big deal. All right. Next up, we have an interesting combination here.
Very interesting.
Very interesting combination here. We have the former.
It almost knocked the hole right through the bottom of the boat.
He was dealing with other issues down south.
Yes.
With another evil faction of guys. He also is a former World Wrestling Federation Intercontinental Champion, so well done. Obviously, we're not talking about him in this match. We are talking about Goldust. That was a big hero you bit into, huh?
Wasn't a hero.
Daddy, why can't you dye your hair gold?
Daddy, why don't you wear a gold suit and prey on men and young boys like I do?
He might have if he wasn't too far.
Do you like my gold wig, Daddy? Fuck you, Daddy. I'll wear a wig whenever I want. This is my gold bodysuit. If I want to wear nothing under it, I'll wear nothing under it. I like the sweat.
Oh, please stop. Please stop. Can't have that vision right now.
Daddy, can I have Derek LaRue come over and bathe me? Do you care?
Stop! Stop!
Fuck you, Daddy.
It's the last thing we need.
Fuck you.
Yeah, I'd rather smoke crack than watch that, so. All right,
How come you weren't in WCW and the NWO, Daddy? You would have made a great third man. Why would you pass up that opportunity? It wasn't cool.
That's why those pictures were black, Daddy.
It could have been you, Daddy. Fuck you. I'm going to burn your book. I'm going to burn your daddy book you gave me.
Goldust.
How come you weren't teaming with Eric Bischoff on Nitro against Larry Zbysko, Daddy? It makes no sense to me why you wouldn't have done that. Why are you toiling away here with Jerry Lawler? It doesn't make sense.
Now you sound like a cross-dressing Dave Meltzer.
Why were you backstage in Gund Arena? Gund Arena's a dump, Daddy. It's not beautiful like you pretend it is. You sick bastard, Daddy. Fuck you and your fucking stupid father, Grizzly Smith. Fuck him, too.
That's her grandfather.
Why don't you go break some rocks? He's not my grandfather. Fuck you. Why don't you go break some rocks, Daddy? Pick up some leaves.
Pick up some leaves. I got to get that bathing thing out of my head right now. Goldust taking on Wild Man Mark Morrow in a very unusual combination here. It was a strange... Talk about this weird kind of other faction that was kind of growing. It was kind of like a, I don't know, like an underbelly faction going on here.
Mm. Well, I do have a little fun time clip. Do you want to hear it?
Oh, anything's better than watching somebody bathe. Derek LaRue, go ahead.
Kelly back here in what appears to be the boiler room. A situation, folks, just unfolded as we saw between The Undertaker and Goldust. And all of a sudden, a mysterious Mankind appeared. Now, I want to ask you, Goldust, is there some kind of allegiance between you and the deranged Mankind?
Mommy couldn't stay anymore because she couldn't stand me, Billy. She didn't leave because of you. She left because of me. Kramer versus Kramer, 1979.
Mommy, I think the dead man is a very bad man, Mommy. I can tolerate what he tried to do to me, but not when it comes to a maternal love. You see, Undertaker, Mommy doesn't want you to hurt her anymore. And what Mommy wants, her little boy provides. Mommy, after the JoJo Miller incident, you told me my hands were made to create beauty, not destruction. But I can't control my
mind. Oh my God.
Anymore. I'm getting very, very angry. Mommy, the dead man is about to find out that destruction can be beautiful. Have a nice day.
I feel like I need to, I owe it to the viewers to set the scene of this promo. They are.
Yes, I think so.
They're down in a boiler room. Goldust is laying on top of a metal locker, curled up in the fetal position. Marlena is rubbing his head and caressing him as he speaks. Mankind comes in. He's caressing Goldust's wig in his hands as he preaches about Mommy. Goldust grabs Mankind's head, wraps his arm around it, and leans in close and hugs him, basically, as Mankind rambles on. Mankind then smashes his head into the locker in anger. That is the scene that we just heard.
Yes. It's like the it's almost like the WWF version of the Rocky Horror Picture Show. It's just one strange screwed up thing after another.
And I'll tell you what, Scott.
Yes.
I fucking loved it. I thought it was great. I thought it was so different and unique, and I liked this pairing, and they were so fucked up and weird. And it seems like they're just doing shit to fuck with people. And I thought it was cool. I thought it was a cool union. And you know, Sable was kind of in the mix here where Mankind is looking up to her as a mother figure, calling her Mommy. And then he was, I don't even know if he was calling Goldust Mommy. And he kept coming out during Marrow's matches and stalking her. And that's why Goldust is actually facing Mark Marrow here. And Mankind comes out during the match to stalk Sable. Sadly, the story's kind of dropped right after the show. Nothing really. It doesn't go anywhere. I know Mick Foley talks about it in his first book a little bit, how the whole angle was going, where he was supposed to be obsessed with Sable and Goldust and Marlena or like his family, and it was just odd. It was weird, and it was just cool. It was like they were just sitting around one night, the writers all fucking hammered or something. It was like, you know, let's put these two freaks together and make them pretend they're a family. It's odd stuff, but it was a cool pairing.
Yeah, and it leads to a good match. I mean, this match is actually, I like it. I actually like this match. It's very very stiff. You know, really they really hit each other well, and you know they put their moves over. It was much more entertaining than I thought it was going to be.
Yeah.
And, you know, Marrow actually starts to finally get a little bit of a push here
mm-hmm.
coming up after this show due to some circumstances we'll talk about in a moment. What was it? You know what? Tell me if you agree with me or not. What I liked about Goldust was, even to this point, and it continues on even through 97, he even can put over this weird, very soft and androgynous, you know, David Bowie-ish, you know, Ziggy Stardust type character, but still really, you know, have a really tough move set in the ring and
mm-hmm.
and not, you know, not let his natural character bleed over too much to where now it's like, oh, now he's a tough guy dressed like a chick. You know, now he's, you know, he's very devastating in the ring to watch, yet still can put over the, you know, the androgynous look. I thought that was a very tough balance to keep. I give him a lot of credit for that. I really do. And Mankind, of course, we'll get more to him in a little bit, but Foley was really kicking the promos good.
Oh, yeah, they both were. Yeah. And I agree with you on Goldust. Like, the dichotomy between his in-ring action and, you know, how stiff his offense was and the weird, bizarre character and all the stalling and the mind games. It's just an interesting character they had built here. And this, to me, actually, live at the time, I remember I was shocked. Shocked that Goldust beat him clean with the curtain call in 11 minutes here. I thought for sure Mero was going to win. He needed the win. He coming off two straight pay-per-view losses to Steve Austin. Goldust seemed to be kind of slipping down a little bit. He's being faded a little. You know, he had this pairing with Mankind going, but as far as like his own career, he didn't really have much going on at this point. So I was definitely shocked. And Mero bust out a brand new move in this match, the Wild Thing, which is a shooting star press, which is really cool to see.
Yes.
And then he doesn't win with it. Goldust comes back, hits the curtain call, and gets to win. I mean, I just remember being really, really surprised at the time. We already had Owen Hart go over. We had the Guns go over. Sid was the only face to win so far. And then you have Goldust defeat Mero, who needed the win probably most of anyone on the show.
I got a question for you, JR. Just thinking as you were discussing that, as you were talking about Mark Mero, you know, we always talk about who was really a victim of the curtain call. And we always obviously talk about Hunter Hearst Helmsley, but almost to a collateral damage way of thinking, Mark Mero was a victim of the curtain call because he was set for a big feud with Helmsley, probably going to get some wins, but because he got you know, turfed for a few months, he ended up becoming a jobber, really.
Yeah, I mean, he picks it back up when, you know, Helmsley returns.
Comes back.
Yeah.
Exactly.
But you're right. It seems like his push as well was delayed. I guess he was set to be married to Helmsley here. But still, yeah. This is a match you would think he'd win. I mean, it's just odd. I don't see why he'd be punished with a loss here. I can see why he's punished by, you know, kind of being stuck with Austin and then not having any kind of title feud or anything going on like he had a little bit earlier. But it's just, I don't know, just a weird decision. Goldust has seemed kind of dead in the water at this point. And maybe they were trying their best to get him going again. But this just seemed like a spot where Mero really needed the win.
Did you feel... I'm getting this feeling as we've been doing the last three or four vaults that the roster was being, you know, rejuvenated and kind of restructured. But it almost seems like there's a lot of guys who really need to be pushed and then suddenly aren't. You know, like...
Perestroika and Glasnost, I dig them the utmost, and how is your sister tonight?
You know, could you imagine Goldust sitting on a piano while Steve Allen's doing this? Well... How about Steve? How about Goldust sitting on the piano, and Jake's daughter sitting next to Steve Allen? You know, my daddy never played music for me.
And daddy only played chopsticks, and then I used them to eat all the Chinese food. That's why I weigh 400 pounds.
He talked about something about muck of avarice. Daddy, I don't even know what avarice is.
Avarice sounds like a delicious sauce I put on my hot dogs.
Fuck you.
Fuck you, daddy.
But I just feel like that a lot of this roster is kind of in the back burner. Like they don't know. Like it, we were saying that the writing has been getting better, but I almost feel like that. Oh my God, we have too many guys now, and I don't know what to do with any of them. It just seems weird. Like there's a lot of guys in holding patterns right now.
Right, but I think it's also that we're getting little mini mid card feuds that we hadn't really had a lot in '95. I mean, we did, but we didn't. I think that's part of it here. So. The guys are in holding patterns, but they're at least having feuds or you know,
yeah,
well done.
Panties. Right.
Yeah, they're getting used correctly. Here's 95. The problem was they had guys. They just never used them. Here, at least they're using all these guys. They may not be getting all pushed at the same time because they just can't. I mean, Goldust, Mero, Austin, Vader. You know, these guys can't all be pushed to the main event at the same time. It just wasn't possible, especially under the model they had at the time. Now, we'll see that they kind of switch things up at the end of the year, and they start using kind of a multi-man main event picture. But at this point, it was really just the champion and the challenger, you know, always focused on the main events.
Right, that's true. But I'm even thinking about title maker. Well, we're going to talk about now what happened with the Intercontinental title situation. Kind of just totally goes up the shitter. But anyway, Goldust kind of gets back on track with a win over Mark Mero. Who I still think is collateral damage of the curtain call. But things start to look up for him over the next couple months. So, all right. Before our next match, and actually before we go to break, let's talk about this development that occurred, JR, involving the World Wrestling Federation Intercontinental Champion, the great Moa Dib.
Well, he was supposed to defend his IC title on this show, as you would expect. I mean, big pay-per-view. You'd think the IC champion would be defending. But just as Ahmed Johnson's star was rising and momentum was building, things came to a crashing halt. Scott. So as you heard Jerry Lawler say there, this man looked like Ron Simmons. He's a little bit bigger than Ron Simmons, but it looks just like him. Why don't you fill us in on who Ron Simmons was?
Well, Ron Simmons was from Florida. He was a superb All-American linebacker at Florida State University. Next to Burt Reynolds, he might be the most popular and most well-known Seminole alum of all time. And maybe Deion Sanders, I guess. Came up through the ranks, hooked up in the NWA in the late 80s, early 90s, had some classic feuds, was pushed on the card very hard. And in the summer of 1992, he set wrestling history by becoming the first black wrestler to become world heavyweight champion. He defeated Vader on an episode of, I think it was NWA, I think it was an episode of Saturday Night or Power Hour. It was a free show. It wasn't a...
It was a house show. He won.
It was a house show. And it was on TV, and Ron Simmons became the first African-American heavyweight champion of the world.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people thought it was going to be the Junkyard Dog for many years.
Yep.
That never happened. In the 70s, you had guys like Ernie Ladd and Bobo Brazil, but those guys were never world champions. Believe it or not, the first ever black heavyweight champion of all time was Ron Simmons.
Mm-hmm.
He also, of course, was in one of the better tag teams of all time.
Yep.
He was in Doom with Butch Reed, feuded by Chunky Skullet Teddy Long.
Yes.
He wasn't as Chunky Skullet then as he was in early WCW.
Yes.
In like 95. About this time, actually, Chunky Skullet was looking pretty hideous. And then he kind of vanished a bit and then showed up here in the World Wrestling Federation under a new name and a new outfit. And he went by the name Farooq Azad.
Odd. Very odd.
Yeah, I don't know where that came from.
And
what was worse than the name was the outfit.
Yes, he has this gladiator helmet on and this little gladiator suit. It's just weird. I don't know why they just have him come as Ron Simmons. I still don't understand it.
Yeah, I don't either. I mean, I don't understand what the big problem is. I don't get it.
But anyway, so Sonny's his manager. So this all went down on the July 22nd Raw. Ahmed Johnson was teamed with Shawn Michaels against the Smoking Guns. So Sonny was already at ringside. And that's when Farooq comes out, assaults Ahmed, boots him in the kidney, and then, they brawl, he beats the crap out of Ahmed, and then is pushed back by officials. So word would kind of leak out that Ahmed was seriously injured in this. However, he would appear on the next couple Raws because they were all taped in one night. So 2 weeks later, he actually won a battle royal to earn a world heavyweight title shot with Shawn Michaels. And there's a lot of intrigue, I remember, into that match. The two of them that were going to face off on Raw. And I think it was supposed to be the night after SummerSlam. So Ahmed won, and they made a big deal out of it during the battle royal, saying he went against doctor's orders because he sustained a ruptured kidney. And then they have an interview with Ahmed, and it was hinted that Ahmed would face Farooq at SummerSlam for the IC title. Well, the next week they finally announced that, you know, heading into SummerSlam, that Ahmed was seriously injured. His kidney was lacerated. He needed surgery and was going to be out of action for a little bit. So there would be no IC title match at SummerSlam. And instead, Farooq comes out here and cuts a promo with Sonny Ahmed hitting the sidelines. And unfortunately, this injury would really start to plague Ahmed. And he'd become very injury prone and sloppy in the ring, and his character just never recovered.
Yeah, and it's really sad because he was on a roll. He was at the top of the main events. He was with Sean, and it just, everything was going well for him. And then this happened, which is kind of dumb luck. It's unfortunate. But yeah, he would never be the same again. He would be sloppy. He would try to protect that kidney, so he would be a lot stiffer. And yeah. He just wasn't the same.
No, that's too bad. And I really remember looking forward to that. You know, Shawn Michaels Ahmed title match in that SummerSlam, which I think would have been really cool at this point because Ahmed was just on fire.
Yeah.
And, you know, him and Shawn probably could have had a pretty good match with Ahmed just tossing him around with his power moves and Shawn flying all around. So it's too bad because Ahmed and Shawn are really becoming booked as the top faces on the promotion at this time. So this is a big blow to him, and it really fucked up the SummerSlam plans as well and a bunch of other things. So weird pairing, though, Farooq and Sonny. What did you think of that?
That was very strange. I don't know where that came from. I'm wondering if that was even, like, on the fly.
No, I don't think so. I think they wanted to probably do more with Sonny. She was already managing the tag champions, and they probably wanted to make a big deal out of Farooq. I mean, I guess I kind of get it. But it doesn't last long, so.
Yeah, I guess if he's attacking Ahmed, it's still showing off her you know, gold-digging wiles.
Right.
By trying to go after another belt. She's already got the tag champs in tow, and now she's trying to get another belt. So, made sense. But it's funny, a misplaced kick. And everything changed. So Ahmed would have to forfeit the Intercontinental Championship. And we'll talk more about what happens from there next week in the next vault, what happens to the Intercontinental title. But it's unfortunate because it was really, you know, going into International Incident, you really felt that the upper part of the card was finally stable and you had some good characters and the fans were happy. And then this just kind of threw the whole thing in the toilet. And it's unfortunate because we goof about Ahmed, but really he was red hot, as you said, and really part of the card. And then, you know, fate came in and booted him in the kidney, and that was that. So we'll get more into Ahmed and into Farooq and into the Intercontinental title picture at the next show. But why don't we take a break? We're already about halfway through. We got three big matches left, including, of course, our main event for the World Wrestling Federation Championship. But first, our new segment for the summertime. It is called JR's Sports Flash.
All right, PTB Nation. This past Sunday, WWE presented No Way Out on pay-per-view, and here are the results. In the pre-show bout, Brodus Clay defeated David Ortonga, and on the main show, Sheamus defeated Dolph Ziggler to retain his title. Santino Marella defeated Ricardo Rodriguez in a tuxedo match. Christian retained his IC title against Cody Rhodes. The Primetime Players won a four-way match to become number one contenders for the tag straps. Layla defeated Beth Phoenix to retain the Divas title. Sin Cara bested Hunico. CM Punk dispatched of Kane and Daniel Bryan to retain his heavyweight strap. Ryback squashed two more jobbers. And in the main event, John Cena defeated Big Show in a steel cage, leading to Mr. McMahon firing John Laurinaitis as GM of Raw. The following night on Raw, the humiliation of Mr. Laurinaitis continued as he teamed with David Ortonga in a loss to John Cena. Ortonga deserted his former boss during the bout, and Cena polished him off with ease. It was announced earlier in the show that WWE would now be reaching out to former GMs to run Raw each week while the search for permanent replacement begins. This week's GM was Mick Foley, but he had little significance on the show as a whole. Also GM of SmackDown this week. In a trip down memory lane, Wendi Richter and Cyndi Lauper returned to WWE ring for the first time in over 15 years. Roddy Piper joined them and paid tribute to Captain Lou Albano before smashing a frame record over the head of Heath Slater. Finally, Paul Heyman and Triple H had a heated confrontation, which Hunter demanded that Brock Lesnar face him at SummerSlam, and ended with the game decking Heyman after Paul got a little too personal with his jabs. This week's 6/18 edition of Raw did a 3.4 cable rating, 4,963,000 viewers, did a 3-3-8 and a 3-4-3. No head-to-head with the NBA Finals this week, but that's a good rating for them, bouncing back even without Vince on the show. Now, a quick trip through the WrestleChat news. The current plan for Raw to move to 3 hours in July is to spend the first 50 minutes or so hyping up the top-of-the-hour match on both TV and Twitter, then kicking the match off at 8:55 to run through the top of the hour. They'll go with another big match or segment right around 10 and a final angle to close out the show during the overrun. Raw will apparently have more of a structured feel to it going forward. TMZ.com is reporting the following. John Cena's estranged wife is convinced that the superstar was banging around her back during the marriage. And now she's on a mission to prove it in court. TMZ broke the story that John was blindsided his high school sweetheart, Liz Cena, with divorce papers back in May after 3 years of marriage. And now Liz's attorney, Raymond Raffoul, tells TMZ they've been getting tips that Cena was messing around during the marriage. If true, this could be grounds for Liz to challenge their prenup. So far, it's unclear if Liz's camp has found any real leads. Calls to John Cena, of course, have not been answered. And former WWE star Ken Doan, Kenny from the Spirit Squad, has also been getting involved, saying in beating this drum, saying Cena broke up his engagement with Mickie James when Cena was having an affair with James while her and Kenny were engaged. So I think there's going to be a lot more to come in this story. No pun intended. John Laurinaitis is no longer the person putting the WWE live event lineups together. Michael Hayes is now in charge of that. When it comes to recruiting talent, there's a rumor that the frustration backstage, because Vince McMahon now wants athletes to be recruited, and they want to sign bigger, more muscular guys. Nonsense on the internet over that. It hasn't been proven yet. We'll see. Vader was actually praising Heath Slater for his work in their match 2 weeks ago, and he actually wants one more run, but his knees are shot and he's got a bad back, so we're unsure if it'll happen. There's concern amongst WWE officials that Vince McMahon's mockery of Jim Ross's affliction with Bell's palsy in a backstage segment on the June 11th Raw Super Show could blow up in the organization's face. The Creative Coalition, which formed a multi-platform, nationwide anti-bullying alliance with WWE Be A Star, would appear hypocritical by conducting business with an organization that practices what they preach against. McMahon's mockery segment struck a nerve with former WCW announcer Mark Madden, who went on Twitter to blast the chief. McMahon mocking Ross's Bell's palsy is unforgivable. What a scumbag, pure and simple. Just a twisted, emotionally crippled jerk-off, he wrote. McMahon wasn't mocking a stranger. Ross is one of WWE's most valuable employees ever. Ross's big sin, he knows more about wrestling than Vince McMahon. Due to depth issues with the roster, Randy Orton will be continued to be pushed to the top when he returns from suspension soon. Orton's been vocally frustrated in the sense that he believes he's better as a heel. WWE feels they need one top babyface to anchor the live events, and they're trying to get Sheamus there, but not sure if he's ready. Which is why Orton is still a babyface. Orton's also frustrated officials took his punt kick away, which is done due to concussion issues. Alberto Del Rio vs. Sheamus for the World Heavyweight title will likely take place at July 15th Money in the Bank pay-per-view. Like last year, we'll have two Money in the Bank ladder matches on the card. Money in the Bank is actually a bit of a throwaway pay-per-view, as they're getting more geared up for SummerSlam, with Triple H vs. Brock Lesnar headlining. And also, while WWE is advertising Brock Lesnar for the August 13th go-home Raw for SummerSlam, he'll likely be back earlier than that, perhaps on the 1,000th episode of Raw. Briefly turning to sports, Miami is home, trying to close out the NBA Finals against Oklahoma City. They currently lead 46-36 with 6.5 minutes left in that game. Turning to boxing, Manny Pacquiao won his challenge of the decision in his title match with Michael Bradley. While the title and the decision will be upheld, this guarantees that there will be a rematch between the two. Also, in the courts earlier this week, Roger Clemens acquitted of all charges. Gigantic waste of money, basically, of all taxpayers. Like, anyone cared about this to begin with, and now they went ahead and wasted everyone's money. So, not cool. And speaking of wastes, the biggest waste of space probably in the world right now, Jerry Sandusky trial hit the closing arguments today, and the verdict's expected in the coming days. Of course, the perennial. Well, yeah, most likely. Attorney actually made some convincing closing arguments, but I don't think it's going to be enough to save him. So, NFL news, there's a rumor that Percy Harvin is demanding a trade from the Vikings. That has not been corroborated just yet, and he was at practice today. So,
yes, yeah.
So, there's a sports flash. Lots going on.
Is that the new theme? Are we going to hear that every week now?
The Brass Bonanza?
Switch it up. Yeah, love Brass Bonanza,
I don't know.
Of course.
Let's see. I'll mess around.
Love Brass Bonanza. Bring back the whale. You know who lives near where the whale played? Austin Pfaff.
Mr. Pfaff.
A couple of things I want to mention about Flash. Great job as always, JR. The Clemens thing, now people are starting to say, well, now he can proclaim his innocence and will he go into the Hall of Fame? Well, that's up to writers. But the interesting thing is, he may not go into the first ballot. I think he's up next year. But the other quick thing is, he may get the benefit of younger people who, as time progresses, when the old writers kind of retire and the new writers end up sliding into those slots as Hall of Fame voters, they may forget all this crap and put him in anyway. I don't know if they'll.
This is what I'm going to say. This is what I have to say about the whole thing. It's stupid because this guy now had his legacy tarnished. You know, he most likely probably did steroids, but you know what? Hasn't been proven. It was tarnished because of the Mitchell Report, which is a joke because it was done by a guy who worked in the Mets and Yankees locker rooms mainly. So it was all New York guys on the list.
Yeah.
And, you know, they went in front of Congress. They paraded just a few guys out there, guys that weren't really savvy or, you know, obviously had something to hide. But the whole thing was completely unnecessary. I don't know why they had to parade the guys out there. So now legacies are ruined. But the thing is, these weren't the only guys doing it. So everyone else is just assumed to skate. Well, these guys get buried. I'm not defending steroid use or whatever. I mean, personally, I don't care, honestly. But to me, I just think they fucked it up by just having, you know, McGuire, Clemens, and a couple other guys, Palmeiro, you know, go out there and sit in front of Congress and wag their fingers and be made to look like fools. Lie, waste taxpayers' money, gets off, and now the only thing ruined is his legacy, which isn't fair because there's a million other guys that probably did steroids too that have their legacy should be ruined, but they're not because of the half-assed way they went about this.
Right.
I know I didn't really get that out as intelligently as I wish to, but
I get your point though, and you're right. There's a Sports Illustrated issue or article coming out soon, unless it already did come out, about Ken Caminiti, who of course was the guy that was the linchpin that started this whole thing.
Right.
So, Heater winning, as we see. Mm-hmm. The postseason hockey awards came out. Henrik Lundqvist, for all you Ranger fans, he won the Vezina Trophy for mm-hmm. the best goalie. Of course, that was won by Tim Thomas a year ago. On a side note, JR, we're not pipping anything tonight, but running in the event center right now, just came up on the screen, one of the old schools off 24/7. I'm going to give you a date. Tell me the familiarity with that date. February 8th, 1986.
I have no idea.
you played a clip of this man earlier in the show. That was the night in Boston Garden that Randy Macho Man Savage became the Intercontinental Champion. He defeated Tito
Santana.
That's
right. Yes, you're correct.
And this is the house show that's on the going on in the event center right now. So anyway, there's your sports flash and all the wrestling news, and you know, maybe we'll start some threads up about some of these topics, things like the whole Vince wanting more muscular guys. I'm sorry. And the whole thing with making fun of JR, we got to get to the point now. Somebody's got to just tell Vince it's over.
Yeah.
You're done. You've lost your, you know what you're turning into? I hate to say this. You're turning into a modern day version of Vern Gagne.
Yeah, basically. Lost his mind.
Yeah, you've lost your mind. And you don't know what's going on anymore, but we'll get into that. Anyway, back to the Gund Arena in Cleveland. Beautiful Cleveland, who right now probably wants, if this lead holds down at South Beach, they're probably going to want to put a bullet in their mouth if this game holds up for SummerSlam 1996. All right.
Hey, Place to Be Nation, this is Gary Michael Capetta, and this is the Place to Be podcast with Scott Riscola and Justin Rosero.
Now you can talk.
Thank you very much.
I think you hold the record for most times where I've told you that there's a clip that's going to play and you still step on
it. No, I was. I was about to say that, and then you were gonna go into it. I was curious to see if it was going to match up, but I was watching.
No, I have to tell you this. You have the worst track record, so I can't really believe you when you say that.
All right. Well, this is from the guy who couldn't say his own name about an hour ago. So, anyway, Leaping Lanny Poffo is on the screen.
If you told me you were going to say my name wrong, I would have allowed you to say it. I would have stopped on you.
Anyway, of course, for anyone who doesn't know, that is the theme of the Midnight Express.
Yes. Okay. We are way the hell off track. So let's go back,
all right, let's get back
to
in.
The Gund
all
Arena. Right. Beautiful Cleveland, yes. As you said.
Yes. Beautiful Cleveland. Matchup. Yes. All right. This is the why the hell did they even bother to do this match? This whole thing just pisses me off. Probably because A, it made no sense. It didn't bring anything to the table. And B, it was art imitating life.
I'll disagree on one level. I thought it did bring something to the table, and that is some great jokes by Jerry Lawler. I thought he was really funny in this feud. You know, at the time, we didn't really know that Jake was back off the wagon and getting sauced on the side and everything. I mean, it just seemed like kind of a feud, you know, bringing up his past, which to me was fair game. I thought it was okay, and Jake seemed okay with it. But You know, I thought Lawler was really, really funny during this feud, and I think he's great when it comes down to the ring here as well. Browns had just left to Baltimore to come to the Ravens earlier in the year. He comes out with a Vinny Testaverde Ravens jersey and just embarrasses the crowd or rips on Cleveland, which must have been tough for him because he was a diehard Browns and Cleveland fan, so I'm sure it wasn't easy for him to do that. But and he brings out a couple bottles of alcohol, and he's taunting Jake, Jim Beam, and Johnny Walker. So, you know, it was I thought this was some of Lawler's better feud work that he's had. Much better than the Warrior feud from earlier in the year.
Well, that was just a disaster. Unfortunately, as I mentioned, Art was starting to imitate life because apparently Jake was starting to swim into the sauce again. Mm-hmm. And what really sucks is he's one of those guys that just really you can't give any sympathy to because I think Vince really gave him a huge opportunity at this point.
Oh, yeah, he was helping book.
Yeah.
And he was involved in some pretty good feuds. He was on, you know, being used in a pretty important role. And yeah, it's just too bad. He couldn't keep it straight. He probably could have been a major force heading into the Attitude Era. I have a little bit of a clip here for the build for this match.
You know it. I know it. I'll tell everybody.
What is your past like? What is your past like? What clothes did you come out from?
What are you talking about? I'm a king.
Yeah, you're a king.
Royal pass.
Out here comes the big guy now. Yeah, but he's climbing in the right in the face of Duke the Dumpster Crossy.
I'm surprised they even let you wrestle anyway, Jake. When you sweat, you're a fire hazard.
On July 21st, Jake the Snake Roberts, you're facing a man who is pulling his own hair out. How are you going to contend with a man like this?
Just got to be prepared, Vince. You know, I've always been a little bit different. My drum beat to, you know, the sound of a beat drum. Oh, brother, there you go, man. I'm just so upset. I can't believe I'm even listening to what you're over there saying.
I can't believe you're talking. Your breath is bleaching my hair.
Oh! Who's the next to crossing?
All right,
just
dude.
Just fine, Buster. All nicely done.
That's the way you do it.
However,
look at this guy.
How would you
He's
know?
Right back up.
Double feature here.
Yeah, here. Let Jake call the action. He's so drunk, he's stumbling over his own words. He can't do it, can he? Huh? You and your buddy Tiny Tim were so bombed when you got off that plane in Philadelphia. You couldn't even walk to get your baggage. They had to send a cart for you. And then you cart-checked the cart.
What?
Yeah, Tiny Tim was driving, and there was Jake riding shotgun, giving him directions. They ran over 40 or 50 people.
Stop it.
Go ahead and tell him you got a ticket for aiding and abetting a DUI. You know, the only thing I can say in Jake's favor now, at least he doesn't drink and drive anymore.
How?
He's afraid he might hit a bump and spill his drink.
I made my mistakes, and I paid for my mistakes. You know, once I was blind, but now I see. Once I was deaf, but now I hear. I know what's going on in my life now, and I've got full control. So, King, if you want something, man, you need to step up. I will serve you.
Oh, wait a minute. Look at that.
Oh, there it is. There it is.
The man of the claw applied on Duke the Dumpster Crossy.
That's what you got to watch.
Yeah. Take a good look at that,
Jake. Same thing to the Undertaker.
You're going to get to see into your future right there.
And that's it. It's over.
Yeah, Jake Roberts, you and your holier-than-thou attitude, take a look at that.
Man, stop it.
I know he thinks about as much of you as I do.
You're stepping a little too hard. You're stepping a little too hard.
I step where I want to step.
Do you really?
You don't need to be acting tough with those injured ribs, Jake, because you see, I know what kind of hypocrite you really are. I know that you want to stand out here and you want to tell everybody about your past and about your...
What's your problem, man? What's your problem? What do you want to say? What do you want to say? What do you want to say?
Say
you say it to me.
I want to say you're
a hypocrite.
You know what he says? Holier than thou. People like you. I'll prove you he's a hypocrite. No, sit down, my man. You don't need to stand up. People like you are supposed to turn the other cheek, right?
Yeah.
Let's see if you turn the other
cheek. Hey. Wait just a minute.
Hey. Maybe he is. He didn't turn the other cheek. Let's see how the other cheek does, huh? How does the other cheek do, Jake the Snake? Are you...
So pretty good stuff there. I mean, and there was more of that over the weeks.
Your breath is bleaching my hair. That was actually a good line. I like that one.
And I mean, Lawler really, you know, he really laid into him here. It is a little uncomfortable, I guess, once you know what was really happening. But I don't know. I thought it was funny.
Wow, Jake was assassinating his
Donnie,
lines.
Stop stumbling over your words. Can't you just fucking speak like a normal human being?
Daddy, why can't I have a crown and a glittery jacket?
Danny,
my hair's better looking than his.
Danny, how come you're not the king? How come Jerry Lawler's the king? It makes no sense to me. How come you can't get that done, Daddy?
I'm sure he wasn't talking to her at this point. I don't think he was doing much at this point. But,
Daddy, get off the fucking bathroom floor for once, will you please?
Oh, my God.
So there's actually another big moment here on this show, and in this match, we have a someone on guest commentary.
Yes,
U.S. Olympic star Mark Henry had just signed Vince McMahon to Vince McMahon had just signed him to a 10-year contract, and of course we see him in his in-ring debut next month. So we'll talk about a little bit more there. But he stumbles over his words worse than myself and Jake do throughout this match.
Oh my God! Yeah, he was kind of he was kind of as you say, he signed Vince to the clean and jerk in the Olympics. Yes. Yeah, this match is horrendous though. But honestly, going in, and I remember I rented this. Honestly, what were you really going to expect? I mean, really, it wasn't much going to come out of it. The only good thing about it was it didn't only eat up 4 minutes, so it wasn't the end of the world.
Yeah, I was surprised that Jake lost though. I thought for sure he would win this after the way he had been really kind of shit on and beaten down verbally. I was surprised Lawler got the win, but I guess it made sense because they were kind of setting him up for Henry the next month. But
right,
still kind of surprising.
Do you think Jake was being punished here?
Maybe. No, I don't think they really knew. Yeah, I just think they thought it didn't really matter if Jake won or lost, and I think they wanted Lawler to have the win before he put over Henry. So I think that was the main goal. I remember just being shocked at the time because, again, like the earlier match with Marrow and Golas, I thought Jake would be, set up to get the win here and get his heat back a little bit.
So Lawler wins his first. It's been a while, I think, right, since he actually won a match. It's been a pay-per-view match anyway.
In your house, one maybe.
Yeah, I guess he hasn't been on any Survivor teams. Yeah, pretty much. So his first win in over a year and a couple months. And he defeats Jake the Snake, and his finisher is a bottle of Jim Beam to the throat.
Yes, interesting.
Yeah, it's very interesting. All right, now let's go to one of our double main event matches.
Want the build first, or do you want to set it up first?
Do you have a clip?
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to open the window. Go ahead. I'm not going to play the clip.
The intense and unpredictable relationship between The Undertaker and Mankind seems to have been forged by fate ages ago. Although both dwell in a world of darkness, only one embraces the light. Based on an unearthly hatred, Mankind began his assault on the realm of The Undertaker over 5 months ago.
Look out! Oh my gosh! It's gonna change the game and those fingers down there!
The Undertaker has experienced the paralyzing effect of the mandible claw on more than one occasion. Mankind, from the start, had a dangerous craving to destroy The Undertaker, carefully choosing moments when The Undertaker would least expect it.
What is that? That's Mankind! That's Mankind!
That's Mankind underneath the ring!
Mankind, up from the bottom of the ring! He's got the mandible claw on The Undertaker!
The Undertaker has emerged from each of these attacks with a growing anger beyond earthly limits. The uncontrollable rage of these two superstars transcends titles and can only be confined within the bowels of tonight's arena. Without doubt, Mankind poses The Undertaker's most threatening challenge to date. Mankind, physically and mentally disfigured, seems to thrive on pain, a consequence tonight's Boiler Room Brawl will most certainly deliver. The only question left is how much pain can these superstars endure?
So, yeah, more of the same for this build to this feud. Still scorching hot. Mankind, of course, had the most recent victory. Undertaker looking for revenge.
Yes. But it would be under the auspices of Mankind's territory, that being the Boiler Room.
Mm-hmm.
And the way the match was, the match starts in the Boiler Room. They brawl, battle down there, and eventually they come outside and get in the ring. And the winner of the match was the guy that would get to Paul Bearer and get the urn.
Yes.
So there was no pinfalls here.
Yeah, and the Boiler Room part was actually filmed earlier in the day. And then they spliced
it together. Actually,
the day before. Oh, yes, day before, sorry. And they edited it down to kind of give it some flow and... The Mankind and Taker waited backstage, and once the pre-tape part ended, they started brawling, came to the curtain. Also kind of weird is the fans in the arena were watching this on TVs that were set up, almost like you see in a classroom, like on a stand with a VCR kind of thing.
Yes.
And they were lined up around the ring, and that's pretty much what they had to look on. And I'm sure there was a video wall up high as well, but, So it kind of adds to a little bit of, An odd atmosphere, because it's a little bit quiet during this match because they're not really watching it. It's kind of just on these little TVs, and McMahon, Lawler, and Perfect and Jim Ross are very subdued as well. So,
The action in the Boiler Room is not bad. I mean, they're really beating the crap out of each other. So, I think what kind of definitely different. I think what kind of kills this match is there's really no energy coming from the arena because they don't really know what the hell's going on, it kind of takes out the juice of the match. However, if you're watching it at home, which you were and I would when I rented the tape, the Boiler Room portion is actually quite good, I think. I think they really go after each other pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
Very long match. Very long match. Over 27 minutes.
Yes, that is crazy long in the show.
That's crazy long for a match that didn't have a title involved in it.
Yeah, they could have shaved probably 8 or 9 minutes off this and made it a little bit tighter. I mean, the bottom's okay, but early on, like, Undertaker's kind of looking around and Mankind's hiding and he's trying to find him, and it made sense within the story that Mankind was at home and comfortable in the Boiler Room and he was, had the advantage in the match. So one spot, though, that is not good is Undertaker actually cuts his arm in the Boiler Room and developed a very serious staph infection, which actually nearly led to him having his arm amputated from the elbow down, which would have ended a legendary career before it was even, a quarter of the way over. So,
yeah, that's bad, huh? Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Yeah, it would not have been good. One of my favorite spots is when Foley climbs up a ladder and he takes a nasty plunge into the concrete on the floor. Onto a series of poles on the floor. Big pile of steel poles. I thought that was pretty great.
Yes, I agree. Had a good sound to it.
Mm-hmm.
Reverberated. Yeah, no, definitely a good spot. I think everything in the Boiler Room was good.
Yeah.
And then they head outside.
And he takes another sick, nasty plunge onto the exposed concrete floor.
Yes, yeah. That was right afterwards, yes. So Mankind really, look, let me tell you something. We could say we want about Mick Foley. I've got my, I have my criticisms of him. But early on here, he really deserves, like, the MVP award for really putting this feud over and really, rejuvenating Taker and really getting him back in a groove.
And taking the bumps to put it over, too.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, the two bumps in the Boiler Room were not easy. I mean, there's not many guys, and we see that for the rest of Mick Foley's career, that he takes bumps that most people probably wouldn't. The one on the poles probably hurt.
They all hurt, I'm sure.
Back and, yeah. Yeah. So, yeah.
And really, in the Boiler Room, too, we said the commentators were subdued. They barely even talk. It's a lot of just like, you can kind of hear them making noises on commentary, but they're not really much. You have to be really patient to like this match. It's not something you can throw in on a weekly basis and watch. But maybe once every handful of years you can throw it in and kind of relive it. But it was an important part of this feud, and even more important was the finish. Undertaker dispatches a Mankind, gets into the ring. He drops down to a knee like he's done hundreds of times for Paul Bearer. Paul Bearer lifts the urn up, is about to hand it to him, and boom, cracks Undertaker over the head with it. Big surprise. Mankind comes in. Paul Bearer hands him the urn. Mankind wins the match, and he leaves with Paul Bearer embracing. So Undertaker and Paul Bearer, a relationship that had been since, nearly 5 years now at this point?
Yeah.
Or nearly 6 years, right?
Late, 6 years,
late 1990, so or early 91. So these guys have been through thick and thin together, and you never really thought Paul Bearer. He was a character that didn't really make sense with anyone else, you thought, I think that's why it was kind of surprising. You're like, wow, really? Paul Bearer is going to be with somebody else other than Undertaker? It doesn't kind of make sense.
Yeah, and again, it changed the whole scope of the company, changed the whole scope of the storylines, changed Taker.
Mm-hmm.
I think almost for the better. By the way, this match, if you don't have the show, this match is on that Undertaker's Deadliest Matches DVD that came out a few years ago. It's on that set. And that I got that courtesy of Graham Cawthon on thehistoryofwwe.com. I would have to say, JR, that I think this win for Mankind turns the corner in many ways.
Mm-hmm.
Taker changes after this match. Most people use like the typical cartoony dead man. Everybody liked him. Big wins. Now, shall I even say Taker gets even darker?
He gets darker and seems more human in a way, too.
Yes.
He's not the zombie undead weirdo that he used to be. Now he kind of has a little bit more depth.
Yeah.
And that depth almost left the promotion because he was pretty upset, according to the rumor mill at this time. He was supposed to be taking a couple months off. He'd come back with a new look. And there was actually rumors that he was going to come back in all white because he gets carried off by the Druids at the end of this match. There were also rumors that he was leaving the promotion to head to WCW. I don't know what they would have done with him. I don't know what kind of gimmick they could have given him, because obviously he was living off the Undertaker name. So I don't know how legit those rumors were, but there were rumors that he just was not very happy in general. Vince decided, you know, I'm going to quiet those rumors and try and get Taker happy again. So he doesn't repackage him, and Taker actually just shows up the next night on Raw with no real explanation of why he disappeared. So odd things going on backstage, but probably the hottest feud of his career going on camera right now.
Could you imagine if he did come back in all white? How funky would that have been?
Yeah, it would have been crazy looking. Weirder would have been if he went to WCW and like joined the NWO. Maybe you could see it later in his career, but at this point, it would have been very off-putting.
Probably would look like one of the Harris brothers,
yeah.
Most likely. But it did not happen, thank God. And but Mankind, with maybe the biggest upset in a major match to this point in WWF pay-per-view history. There aren't many.
Hey, BTB Nation. It is now time for the Rob Houston Memorial Hacksaw Jim Duggan update.
I got my 2x4.
What's up, bitches? It's D. Lou in the motherfucking morning zoo here with the Sugar Tits Surprise just for you. We're here at the Jim Duggan Update, WCW, main event, 8-11, Jim Duggan, and your boy, Sergeant Craig Pittman, more like Sergeant Craig Pitbull, the one that ate my shit, versus the Faces of Fear. We have no result. Graham Cawthon, what are you doing, buddy? We need the result for that. August 15th, 1996, Clash of the Champions from Denver, Colorado. You know what's near Denver? Boulder. That's what's named after me, because of the boulders on my chest. VK Wall Street defeated Jim Duggan on 349. I still don't get why he's VK. I don't know why he's not just Wall Street. Jim Duggan tried to use a roll of tape before he could tape his wrists. He better tape mine before I slip them. I can't take this shit anymore. Ric Flair, Arn Anderson, and Randy Savage were supposed to face a giant. VK Wall Street, Jim Duggan. I don't know what the fuck this thing says. It says Duggan. I don't know if he's wrestling or not. Jim Duggan defeated Wall Street again on Monday Nitro from the Von Braun Civic Center, August 19, 1996. August 24th, he defeated Ned Brady, twin brother of Mike Brady. August 26th from Monday Nitro, the Giant defeated Jim Duggan in 4 minutes, 34 seconds. August 31st, Jim Duggan defeated Ming with the Tongan Death Grip. Wait, that don't make no sense. Just like me, I'm out of here. Derek LaRue and the Sugar Tits Express.
Okay. All right.
You okay?
Boulders on my chest.
And every week before, I wonder, am I going to come up with anything? And this kind of comes out.
Oh, my God. D. Lou. You know he's going to use that now. He's going to make a fucking shirt with it or something.
I don't think he listens.
I don't think he might.
I wouldn't if I were him.
Oh, my God. Oh, God. Oof. Okay. Did he say Sergeant Craig Pittman ate his shit?
Pitbull ate his shit.
Okay. Okay. Let us now finally get to our main event for the World Wrestling Federation Championship. Your champion, the Heartbreak Kid, Shawn Michaels. He has been on a roll since winning at WrestleMania 12 with some big wins. What is he? He's got, what, 4 wins? Well, he lost, let's see. If you count WrestleMania 12, he's almost undefeated this year.
Mm-hmm.
Except for the loss, obviously, this past month at International Incident. He was pinned by his opponent tonight.
Yep.
The number one contender for the World Wrestling Federation Championship, the Mastodon. I believe he's from Boulder. How ironic. That is, of course, Vader, the jewel of Camp Cornette.
Devoted sister, beloved cunt.
Daddy, don't let them call me that. Fuck you.
Danny, you have a bigger cunt than I do.
And it's in the sink.
Along with my dishes, I just had dinner.
Yes.
Fuck you.
Vader, obviously, this is the position we've been waiting for him to be in pretty much since he arrived at the beginning of the year. In the slot for the world title.
And he had really been dominating Shawn. He pinned him at International Incident. Then on the August 12th Raw, Michaels was taking on Owen Hart. Shawn got the victory. Vader attacked. Shawn was distracted, though, when Vader hit him with a clothesline, began putting the boots to him. Vader continued to punish him, finally put him down with a pair of killer Vader bombs, and the show faded out with Vader going up to the top, lining up a Vader salt. So we don't know if he hit it or not, but...
I apologize, but I wonder if D-Lew's side job is doing captioning, because I have to say this. I have my the event center on mute, and George Animal Steel's in the ring. However, the captioning called him George the Anal Steel. So
that sounds more like a Rotella fuck-up. Anything grammar or spelling-related.
That is true, yes. All right. So Vader was coming in on a roll, and Shawn actually was coming in somewhat of a slump. I thought, believe it or not, I don't know what you were thinking, but believe it or not, I know I didn't see the show live, but I was watching the build. I had a feeling that Vader was going to win this match.
Somebody would have been surprised.
I had a feeling he was going to win. I don't know why. Maybe because I was not a big Shawn fan at the time and love Vader, so... maybe that's what it was. But I had a weird feeling he was...
Well, Vader had been booked, and he had been booked so strongly heading into this match. But I guess when at the time, I wasn't really aware too much of it. But looking back, the fact that Vader picked up those wins was clearly setting up, Shawn to get the victory back.
Exactly. And apparently, this is according to the IWC, the urban legend, Vader was actually supposed to win this match and win the title. But as he... And this is where the hypocrisy comes in. This is the stretch where I think a lot of people dislike Shawn severely. Here's a guy who used to bitch and moan. He didn't want to leave. He wanted to stay WWF. He didn't want to go to WCW in 94 because he wanted to be involved in the whole Hogan antics and all the politics. And what does he fucking do? He throws a fucking hissy fit, cries and whines like a bitch, and wants the... And it turns out that he gets his way and the match has changed. There's actually two dusty finishes. Not just one dusty finish in a match. There's two dusty finishes in a match.
And now the thing is, though, I mean, I don't know if that's a legit rumor or if that's a Scott Keith special, that was kind of floating out there. Right. Who knows? But we do know that he does throw a temper tantrum during the match.
Yes.
Vader's out of place when he goes for a move. He stomps down off the ropes and stomps around and kind of smacks Vader a little bit. He's lucky Vader didn't murder him right in the ring.
Yeah, I would have.
But the match is weird because I think it's very good. The action is great. The two have really good chemistry. Shawn's flying around. Vader's tossing him around. But I don't know if I really like the two kind of fuck finishes in the middle. I'm not really crazy about the DQ. Cornette gets involved. They call it DQ. And then they restart the match. And then Vader wins by count out. And they restart the match again. It was just kind of goofy. I don't know why they just didn't give him 22 minutes to let him go. It's not like anyone thinks, Vader's definitely a threat because he won... he won twice, once by count out, one by DQ. And when I say by DQ, I should have said that Shawn got DQ'd because he used the racket that Cornette brought in. Right. Jim Cornette asked to be restarted, and they restarted. So this is kind of weird. I don't know. Is this? Yeah, Vader beat him twice, but they were both kind of cheap. I don't think it really adds anything to Vader. So.
Yeah, I didn't have a total problem with it. I thought the psychology was good. Vader got a couple of wins, but obviously Cornette wanted to restart it because...
Why did they restart it, though? When can a manager just say... Since when do managers dictate what the World Wrestling Federation does? It doesn't make sense to me. I don't get why.
Oh, no, I don't get it either, but I don't know. I thought the psychology was okay. But if it didn't happen, I wouldn't have complained. I don't know where Jim... Maybe because, because he was the recipient of the victory, they choose instead of accepting...
You can't just win by DQ and win by count out, Daddy, and then just restart the fucking match. It doesn't make sense to me, Daddy. The booking is questionable at best.
Imagine if she was the Raw GM. Maybe she was the one behind the laptop. But
Daddy, later tonight you'll face Kane. Okay, I'll see you later. Bye. Fuck you.
Let's just look at the in ring work. The match itself is very good. It's actually
of course.
It's actually on a couple of. Let me see what Graham has here.
I mean, a match of the night in my eyes, easy.
Yeah. It's on the Shawn Michaels, the Heartbreak Express tour, which must have been a tape. and it's on two DVDs. It's on the Greatest Wrestling Stars of the 90s. It's also on the Wrestling's Highest Flyers DVDs. So this match is in, out in a couple of compilations if you don't have the show. The hissy fit, this is what makes, another thing that makes me mad about Sean. He expects perfection. He expects matches to go the way he'd like them to go. So instead of improvising and just letting the match go, he suddenly just decides to look like a jackass in the middle of the ring. Like, you could just tell he was a mess. And if you watch the Heartbreak and Triumph DVD, you hear things, you know, that Sean was getting, you know, felt a lot of pressure on him because, you know, as we mentioned in last week's vault, obviously, and as we talked about last night on our specialty vault, that, you know, the NWO was starting, things were starting to build, WCW was starting to really gain steam, ratings were starting to really shift their way on a more somewhat permanent basis for the time being. So Sean had a lot of pressure on him because he's the champion and the product, you know, the promotion is in second place. Mm-hmm. So we had a lot of pressure on him.
Yeah.
And I think he was not dealing with it well. And that's why he would pitch these fits. Now, Vader took the high road and decided, all right, you know, we'll work this out and move on. But as we see, the following month, Sean's opponent doesn't take too kindly to it. But
yeah.
We'll get to that next week. So eventually, Sean does not beat him with Sweet Chin Music. He hits him with a moonsault press.
Mm-hmm.
Matches just over 22 minutes.
So, I mean, the last two matches on this card pretty much took up the majority of the show, 27 and 22 minutes.
Yeah, exactly. So almost an hour, if you count intros.
Which makes sense. I mean, those are the two major feuds pushed heading in here. Those are the four top guys outside of Ahmed, who's now hurt. So it made sense that these guys got the most time and the, you know, the stories to tell.
Right.
And I'll tell you what, Scott, too. Outside of the Farouk promo, this is a pay-per-view very light on nonsense and very heavy on in-ring action. I mean,
yes.
Every match gets some decent time. Not a lot of backstage fluff, not a lot of, you know, in the arena fluff. Just a lot of wrestling, which, again, shows the strength of their mid-card now that they have, that they can put these guys out for long matches. And the main events have been restocked, too, with guys that can go and deliver very good long matches.
Yes. And the booking in that aspect was very good. We were talking earlier about, you know, Austin not being on the main show and everything, but it probably leveled out in the end properly. And they took advantage of the feuds they needed to put over and the stories they needed to tell and getting things done.
Mm-hmm.
So Sean, through, you know, his own way of doing things, retains the World Wrestling Federation Championship. And another thing about Vader, we talked about him, you know, pitching a fit, you know, Sean pitching a fit in the ring. He obviously, I'm sure Vader was upset that he was supposed to win the title and then Sean.
If so. We still don't know if that's legit.
Again, we don't know. But so allegedly, if that's the truth, he could have really, you know, fucked Sean up pretty
right,
good in this
yeah.
match. Cause that's all, but he didn't. He took the high road. And that's good for Vader. You know, we as fans and analysts appreciate that professionalism. So Shawn Michaels retains his World Wrestling Federation Championship once again with a win over Vader. Here at SummerSlam.
And that brings it into SummerSlam 1996. Scott, what do you think overall of the show?
I didn't mind it. The total, by the way, I have in my final analysis, the total runtime of the last two matches was 49:38.
Mm-hmm.
So that, yeah, it's at least a third of the show. You actually graded this show slightly higher than I did.
I know. I mean, I'm factoring in nostalgia. I'll freely admit that. I mean, there's no surprise there.
Yeah. There were some high points. I mean, I probably should grade this show a little higher because I just realized I have two threes and a three and a half, I think.
Mm.
So let me see here. I got the opener as a three. Let me just, again, if you're wondering what we're talking about, hop onto our message board, bigelow34.proboards.com, and follow along. Three, and then another three, and then another three, and a three and a half. So I probably should grade this show higher than I did. Yeah, I would probably, right now I have it as a C+. I would probably even it with you and bump it up to a B-. It's really not a bad show.
No, it's kind of just average. I mean, you know, a lot of, if you're a fan of 96, it's pretty much features everyone that was, you know, anything at the time. You know, outside of Ahmed, really, was the only guy missing, and that's for obvious reasons. But a lot of stories were progressed. Some were wrapped up here, and I really liked the Michaels-Vader match. I thought the Boiler Room Brawl was interesting, and to me, it's a middle of the road trending down SummerSlam, but you know, there's a lot of good here hidden, and there's a lot of good in the promotion at this time as well. So, to me, I always enjoy this show just because of what it represents. 95, you can maybe argue, actually even had the better action, surprisingly enough. when you compare SummerSlams. But to me, this one showed that they were finally making progress, and really 96 was, they were turning things around significantly.
Yeah. Well, you know, we talk about the in-ring, but again, I mean, the proof's in the print for me. Three threes and a three and a half, that's actually not bad.
Mm-hmm.
So I would say this SummerSlam definitely, like I said it right at the top of our show, some people will think this is one of the better pay-per-views. Others will think that the show is, not up to par. But it's the last SummerSlam that I did not watch live. And I kind of wish I did, because I think I would have enjoyed it. It seemed like it was a really good show, and ended up watching it, and turned out that I liked better than average four of the six matches, or four of the seven matches. So I like the show. I would give it a thumbs up. Thumbs in the middle, slightly up. It's a good show. If you can find a copy of it, get it and have it in your, if you get the cooler with the
I know where you can get it, and you can check out the Bigelow34ProBoards.com message board for details on that.
Yes,
so. All right, exactly. Let's hit the feedback. I'll kick us all off. Right. Jeremy Nichols. I remember ordering this live when it happened and being let down by the event as a whole. Sid, Bulldog, and Taker, Mankind were the only matches worth watching on the show. HBK, Vader should have been completely different, with HBK trying to survive Vader dominating him. Instead, they have a bunch of endings before finally giving us the real one. Between Sean's tantrums and a horribly booked main event, the SummerSlam is crap. And Scott, I actually wanted to talk about this, so we'll take a quick deviation from the feedback.
Sure.
If they booked Vader Sean like Vader Sting, do you think, we look at this whole thing a lot differently?
Probably. Sting's a little bigger than Sean, but not too much bigger. Probably maybe 15
pounds. And what I'm saying about that, I mean, Vader's beating the shit out of him, murdering him, winning the title, and then, they fight to a rematch where Sean finds a way to beat him in the end.
I wouldn't have had a problem with that. We may not have had our great match the following month, but that match could have been put somewhere else, somewhere down the line. I think that was the way to go. See, this is where the mid-90s Sean should have just let things happen. Just let things matriculate. Let things happen. If you lose the title, you lose the fucking title. Who gives a shit? There's nobody else that's going to win it. You probably
Well,
win
I mean, back. Vince might have still wanted some stability too, though, having the face on top during a time where business was down,
Right, but my point is, he doesn't have to have the title to be the top
True.
Face.
I would have liked to see the Sting thing. I would have liked to see Vader murder him here, and then
I think so too.
Move on. All right, good. Pick us back up, Corey Mack.
Okay, Corey Mack. I was let down by this show, having ordered it live. I wanted to like it more, but it kind of fell flat. High point: Sean versus Vader. Even though I didn't care for the way they went about it. Low point: Boiler Room Brawl. I like that they were trying something different. It was just so slow and tedious. Extra point: having just won the King of the Ring 2 months earlier, it was lame to send Stone Cold straight to the free for all.
J. Arsenio D'Amato, Yakuza breaking the ropes versus Stone Cold in the Bikini Beach blast-off, made for one memorable free-for-all. Mark Henry offered some Art Donovan-like commentary in the Lola Roberts match. Mr. Perfect is
good comparison.
Mr. Perfect is hilarious on commentary. When Jake entered the ring and Vince said he looked angry, Perfect said no, he's just hungover.
Jesus. Wade Ferrari, a solid show that was one of the better pay-per-views of 96.
I'm hungover too! My gut hanging over my belt!
Yes, and my boulders. It's too bad, though, that Bret Hart was on his hiatus during this time, as he always had awesome matches at the SummerSlam.
Mm-hmm.
If he was there, it probably would have been best show of the year, but as it is, it's probably a distant third behind King of the Ring and Survivor Series, which we'll talk about in a few weeks. Didn't get why Stone Cold and Yokozuna wasn't on the pay-per-view instead of just being on the pre-show, as that's a match that I think could have been hyped up more, as Stone Cold had a lot of momentum from his King of the Ring win, and Yoko, although he was way past his usefulness, was still a big name. Kind of surprising how short the card was, only seven matches, but all of them were enjoyable other than Jake Lawler and the four-way, which really showed how bad the tag division was at this point. Good to see the master and ruler of the world, Sid, get a big win. Although he might not have been the greatest wrestler in the world, I thought Sid was great in the role of the big badass babyface, as he just had so much energy and charisma, it was real hard not to like him. Undertaker Mankind was a great match with a surprise ending with Paul Bearer's heel turn. Really liked that HBK Vader match despite all the non-finishes and Shawn acting like a big baby and pretty much exposing the business. It sucks that this was pretty much the end for Vader as a main eventer, as I thought he performed really well in this match, as his offense and his bumping, especially for a big guy, were both really good. It's too bad they only got one pay-per-view match out of the feud. I agree with that too.
Well, there was supposed to be two, but we'll get to that. Corey Ferreira, fairly good SummerSlam and miles ahead from the show. He got 95. Austin Yoko, so Austin, your King of the Ring winners left off the card. What a push this guy was getting at the time. Well, he beats Yoko, who's way past it, which is sad. Also, I believe this match was where Austin shat himself, apparently. I don't remember that story.
I don't remember that story either.
Owen versus Savio is a decent opener, but both guys are good workers, Owen especially. Tag match, it's official, the tag division hit its rock bottom here. The match is awfully, awful, fuck, this is bad. Highlight, once again, is Sonny. Sid versus Bulldog, who in their right mind would let Sid and Bulldog have a singles match on pay-per-view because this is awful. Bulldog's one of them guys who would work up a good match with the right guy like Sean, Brad, or Owen. He can never work a good one with less than par worker. Goldust match, Mero is a good little match, but I'm sure these two worked in WCW and had prior chemistry with each other. So if so, it shows here because it's pretty okay. Lawler versus Roberts. Yeah, so Lawler continues to feud with guys from the 80s. This is awful beyond fucking belief. I wonder what Jake's daughter thought of this one. I think we heard that earlier. Boiler Room Brawl is great. Many people think it's boring or too long, but I think it's awesome. This is the next step in the WWF making the move from the family-friendly product to a more adult-based product. The heel turn from Bearer was a nice swerve, and it gave new direction for Undertaker, going without a manager for the first time. Great main event. The only thing that makes a bad watch is knowing Shawn bitching about Vader being rough in the ring. Did Shawn know beforehand that Vader's a rough guy in the ring? But no, Shawn has one of his cries, and this is the last we see of awesome badass Vader. Though, nonetheless, it's a great match. Overall, pretty good show, with the semi-main events being the two standout matches. Also, the opener is pretty good. Here are the Meltzer ratings. Owen Savio, 2.5. Tag titles, dud. Sid Bulldog, 1 star. Goldust, Mero, 2.25. Lawler, Jake, dud. Taker, Mankind, no rating could be found. And Shawn Vader, 4 stars.
Hmm. Wow, Meltzer gave it 4 stars.
Mm-hmm.
Kevin Jeffrey. This was one of my favorite wrestling road trips ever. First, I attended a WWF house show in Detroit on the Friday before SummerSlam. Then attended this event in Cleveland and the subsequent Raw tapings in Wheeling, West Virginia. They taped 5 hours of Raw and WWF Superstars taping 63 squash matches in Columbus,
Ohio. Oh, my Lord.
Wow. I mean, that was like that taping I went to in early 87. I don't think that was that many. I think maybe there was about 40, but wow, jeez. 63 squash matches. First of all, that's a hell of a trip. Nice job, Kev.
Yeah.
Wow. Then went to the Then went to the WWF house show in Toledo. As a fan in the arena, the Boiler Room match between The Undertaker and Mankind was awful.
Yep.
The WWF rolled out 5 TVs on carts for fans to watch ringside, and stadium scoreboards broadcast the proceedings in the back. For the home viewer, this was okay, but in the arena, experience was not planned out real well. Very good card, but the highlight came from the reaction from a kid in my section. When Vader was pounding the crap of Michaels, the kid was crying, bawling his eyes out and throwing a fit. Funny classic meltdown. One highlight of the WWF Superstars taping was the pig pen that they set up. A buddy and myself had upper-level tickets, and they asked people to come down to floor level to sit in the pig pen. Yes, I sold my soul to the WWF that night. Part of the deal, people in the pen had to wear Godwin t-shirts, hold up a Godwin foam finger, and put on a pig nose.
That is hilarious.
Awesome experience. Sounds like LaRue's 10th birthday party.
I wonder if we can find that on YouTube anywhere, Kevin Jeffrey and the pig pen.
Yes, very interesting.
Kind of like National Lampoon's vacation, European vacation. Pick it up, poke. Jay Hinchy. The WWF makes its official debut in Cleveland for SummerSlam 96, an overall solid show. I remember watching the Scramble at my grandparents' house, later renting it a few times, and eventually buying the tape last year. Free-for-all, Stone Cold versus Yoko. Austin goes from winning King of the Ring to the pre-show against a former champion. Austin wins here, but could really kick things into high gear next month in Philadelphia, cutting down a certain someone who's been absent since WrestleMania. Owen Savio is a good way to kick things off. Really couldn't go wrong with these two to start their second biggest pay-per-view of the year. Owen wins at the cast and sharpshooter. Four-way tag title match, let's say not the best tag match ever, but I didn't hate it. Not sure why the Body Donners are even in this, and Zip hurt himself. It was actually Skip. An MSG the week before, it was in a neck brace. The Guns keep the titles here. Sonny is hot. Sid's return continues the decent out against British Bulldog, and wow, is he over or what? And yes, he really was. Mero Goldust, I really liked this match, and it was really back and forth stiff contest. Mankind coming out to freak out Sable is an odd moment, but made sense because he's aligned with Goldie. I also love Mr. Perfect marking out at the moonsault. Mero salt. The King versus Jake Roberts, well, not much of a match. The Lawler stalled for most of it. He wins here, but the feud would continue a little bit over the next few months. King poking fun at Cleveland fans with the Ravens jersey is funny, though. Undertaker Mankind, wow, what a nasty match this is. I know it's probably hard for the live crowd to sit there, but on TV it came off looking so brutal. Paul Bearer turning heel is a shocker of the year, and I never saw it coming. Mankind wins, he has a manager, and Taker is by himself for the first time. I love Raw the next night in Wheeling when the Druids bring Undertaker to the aisle and he pops up with flames coming out from the ring posts. Main event for the WWF title, and what a match this was. I know some didn't like the two false finishes, but Cornette having the match restart added to it, in my opinion. HBK wins eventually with Sweet Chin Music and remains champion. Overall, good show. Too bad Ahmed Johnson did not defend his IT title here, thanks to debuting Farouk several weeks prior on Raw.
Okay, our Pablo Picasso himself, Jason Greenhouse.
No, possibly you skipped Ryan Howard.
I did? Did I go down too far? Oh, I did go down too far. Okay, sorry. Ryan Howard. Haven't started fielding yet, but aiming for the All-Star break for my return. Won't matter, your team will still be in last place.
Nah.
The Bikini Beach Blast-Off. The only place you'll see Bob Holly, Freddie Joe Floyd, Aldo Montoya, the Bushwhackers, and who? All in the same place. Jerry Lawler with the line of the night. I bet if this pool was filled with booze, Jake would be here.
I bet if the pool was filled with underage women, Lawler would be there.
Yes. And I bet if the pool was filled with chocolate pudding, Jake's daughter would be there.
I bet if the pool was filled with anything chocolate, Derek LaRue would be there.
Some might see the Austin free-for-all match with Yoko as a major step backwards, but the more I think about it, the better it was. This card had some pretty good feuds heading into it. Who would Austin really have feuded with to have a pay-per-view match on the show? Mero again, Savio again. Even though Yoko was in terrible shape, they still put Austin over against the former WWF champion. It didn't really do much for Austin, but it could have been that he was left off the card completely. I'm glad that he made the free-for-all, because I have the VHS with this match on it. It's actually the cover of the VHS, Yoko breaking the ropes. Savio Owen versus Mero Goldust are both very underrated matches. Check YouTube for these two, as they don't get recognized at all for being very solid opener and mid-card matches. Four-way tag shows you two things, just how hot Sonny was and just how shallow the tag division was at the time. Nice to see old Leaf Cassidy rocking and rolling on a pay-per-view, though. Taker and Mankind defined the word brawl. The pallbearer swerve was excellently done, and it made you wonder how Taker would be able to continue without his now former manager. Shawn Vader was a fantastic David vs. Goliath match. HBK was damn near untouchable in the ring at this time and couldn't have had a bad match to save his life. One last thing, during the Bikini Beach Blast, good old TL Hopper found what appeared to be a poop. They said it was a baby Ruth in the pool and ate it. That, of course, is being stolen from a scene from Caddyshack. That's where we're at in terms of comedy in the WWF. Come on, 97, you can't get here soon enough.
Jason Greenhouse, possibly the worst SummerSlam to date. The undercard is terrible. Taker and Mankind continue the feud with the first Boiler Room match. Some say this feud did two things, it elevated Mankind's career and saved Taker's. Shawn Vader had a nice 20-minute main event. HBK bumped his ass off in the ring and cried like a bitch backstage. As legend has it, that Vader was supposed to go over, but Shawn used his politics to make sure it didn't happen.
Okay. Pete K says, after an awesome SummerSlam and WrestleMania, and King of the Ring comes a fairly boring SummerSlam. Sid and Davey Boy was a disappointment for me, and could never get the Sid factor, and thought Davey Boy was awesome, and a good wrestler, and deserved a world title reign, or at least the very least another IC title reign. Redemption was to come for Davey Boy Smith next month. The main event was good because it featured two of my favorite wrestlers ever, two awesome wrestlers who never have had bad matches. This one is no different, though it does have some botches. HBK was awesome, and yes, I like the belt on HBK. However, Vader is awesome also, probably the best main event, best big man wrestler ever. It's a shame he never got a world title reign, but when you had less talented big man hold the belt, Sid, Yokozuna, and D's hole, Vader for 2013 Hall of Fame. Wow, that's a lot of beef in that Hall of Fame. Ladies and gentlemen, it is time for the comments of
King James Manda.
The King.
Usually my favorite pay-per-view, but I have to agree this is a pretty shitty SummerSlam. Most of the matches are forgettable, but for some reason, I absolutely love Psycho Sid versus British Bulldog. The way Sid works the crowd throughout looks so much more interested than he was a year earlier. Don't think you can really put the Boiler Room Brawl and Jake Roberts versus Jerry Lawler on the same card, as they're both very uncomfortable matches to watch. Shawn continues to make everybody think he's a grade-A cunt by throwing a hissy fit at Vader during their match. Overall, poor show, which means we have been treated to two bad SummerSlams in a row. I cannot wait for Brett to come back. We need you. You're all dismissed.
Thank you, King. Francisco Soyero. Being from Portugal, I didn't grow up watching wrestling. Got SummerSlam 96-97 DVD some time ago and tagged classics. I didn't know if I should laugh or cry with the Bikini Beach Blast Off and TL Hopper. Yoko's match was just sad, and the tag team scene was still too cartoony. I liked Sid hearing voices in his head as he entered, though. My favorite match was the Boiler Room Brawl. Pretty intense. Sadder than TL Hopper's findings at the bottom of the pool was Daddy Jake's King angle. Daddy Jakes. In poor taste, Vince. At last, what time is it? It's tantrum time. Call the Marines, Corny, because Ego Kid is running wild.
And Francisco, welcome to the nation. Good to have a guy from Portugal. That's pretty cool.
Yes, it is very cool.
The birthday boy, Mr. Wilkinson. Pretty middle-of-the-road SummerSlam. Owen Savio's solid SummerSlam opener, and Sid Bulldog was a textbook way to use two power guys in a short amount of time. On Jake's DVD, he says that Lawler used real Jack Daniels either during the match or during one of the build-ups, and he had been clean. Now, whether he was in the muck of avarice or not, I don't know. But if that was true, Law was a real dick. I was bored with the Boiler Room Brawl. HBK Vader was a good match. I don't think Vader winning the title was needed. Shawn is still establishing himself as champion and ending his reign here. I don't believe it was the right move. I don't remember Vader being quite as over as he was in WCW, and I watched WCW when he was there. And you know what the funny thing is, Scott? Lawler's actually a straight edge kind of himself, right? He doesn't drink, so pretty funny.
It is very funny. One half of the power trip from Down Under, Dave Hall. To me, this is a really mixed bag of a show. Owen and Savio and Sid vs. Bulldog were not bad. Mero and Goldust was a little slow for me. The tag match and Lawler vs. Jake totally sucked. Ahmed ends up missing the show with the first of his million injuries over the next 2 years. It was a shame because he was really hot at the time, although it did allow Vince to reevaluate the IC title division, and we get some great matches in the next few months. Undertaker and Mankind is historic, and I like the match. The brawl was rough, but what happened in the ring at the end really solidified Mankind's future in the company and ensured that his feud with Taker was going to be a great career push for both men. Finally, Shawn and Vader put on a great match. The story was good. Vader looked great. I don't mind Shawn keeping the belt here, but I think they should have had Vader go down by DQ and had a rematch next month. I always felt that the loss here really derailed Vader in the WWF, and why Vince would keep his hottest talent in Stone Cold off the pay-per-view card is totally unbelievable.
That music can only mean one thing.
That's right.
Time for Safazio to Fazio. All right, PIC, Safazio's back in the morning zoo. All right, let's get to SummerSlam, okay? The free-for-all match, that's on my Coliseum home video. Austin against Yoko here. Does the Ringmaster theme here, which surprised me. So I feel like it could have changed his theme. Oh, well. Anyways, Austin gets a win thanks to Yoko's botch bonsai drop. Okay, our first match. Now, this was a treat for me. It was the other day after my birthday. I just turned 9, so it was a big deal. Owen Salvio Vega, great match. 13 minutes in this. Like, great opens. Two guys. One is upper mid-card, and one is just solid mid-card worker. So it worked, and I kind of like both these guys. And then interference from Bradshaw made it even better. Then we get the guns against the New Rockers. Nothing much to say here, so moving on. Sid Bulldog, it didn't work for me. 6 minutes? Really? Here's a match to save the night. Goldust-Mark Merrow match. Now, these guys knew how to work in the ring. Merrow's more of a high flyer, and Goldie was more of a brawler. And Goldie's move, the curtain call, is really cool move in this match. It had everything, and Goldie got the win here, which I'm fine with. Now we get the Boiler Room Brawl. I got pissed when Paul turned on Taker and gave Mankind the urn. This is like a hardcore match, and with a lot more edge, because this is when Dirty F was getting the edginess from what was going on down south to Turnerland, so it works. The main event, Shawn versus Vader. Wow! Was awesome. Shawn won. Enough said.
Notice
the feedback always fits perfectly with the Chips theme when it ends.
Yes. And I noticed a lot more punctuations the last couple of comments.
Mr. DeFazio references his father. Right? That means to me that he wasn't just working the gimmick. I think it was legitimate because he hasn't talked about him. So that means he wasn't watching it with him.
Yeah, I guess not. Matt Souza. Not a big fan of this show. I felt that the Boiler Room Brawl went on way too long. If you chop around 5 to 7 minutes off of the match, I think it would have made for a better match. Shawn versus Vader was very good. It's a shame that Shawn played the politics card here and retained the title because Vader could have had an awesome title run. Imagine how great a Vader versus Brett title feud could have been. Overall, mediocre show that is definitely in the bottom of the SummerSlam barrel.
Mr. Pfaff.
Austin Pfaff.
Seeing mixed reviews here, I found this to be a solid SummerSlam. Austin Yoko could even be put on here instead of the free-for-all. Very good opening with Salvio Owen. Tag match was fun for what it was, but of course Sunny came out on top, where she loves it. She had a thing for cowboys and now gladiators. Merrow Goldust is good as well. Mankind's confused on who his mommy is. Sid Bulldog was just there, not offensive. Lawler Roberts was meh. And even though all these jokes Lawler made weren't meant to be funny, I admit I still laugh. Perfect attitude when he said, let him have a double. Hilarious. Hilarious. Boiler Room Brawl was great for the home audience, but most of must have really sucked to the live crowd. Michaels Vader was a great main event, false finishes and all. Michaels really can work with someone different every month, and the next contender will be very different. All right.
We go to Brooklyn to Irv C. SummerSlam 96, opposites attack. Austin Yokozuna was sad to see as Yoko couldn't even get on the ropes anymore and was just too morbidly obese to continue wrestling. Pretty much the beginning of the end for Yokozuna and the beginning of the end of Austin being wasted in the undercard. Great to see Sid back with all kinds of fire. Love the fist pumping and Sid fireworks stand they used to do in the ring for him. I used to like that too, actually.
Mm-hmm.
Goldust Merrow should have been a number one contenders match for the IC title or something in that vein since those two were a big part of that division at the time. Interesting personality clash between Marlena and Sable, though. Lawler Roberts was just uncomfortable to watch at this point with their old ages showing and the far more tasteless alcohol angle being used. Mankind Undertaker was a great fight, being the first Boiler Room Brawl match and all, with a shock ending that I didn't see coming as a kid even after their first encounter at King of the Ring. Finally, the long and controversial main event pitting HBK against Vader. I always thought HBK worked best against much larger opponents, and this was no exception. Long as it was, the restarts made it go by easier, which was something never really done before in the company. Not caring about HBK's tantrum and just enjoying the match for what it was also helped, awkward as it was to watch HBK go back to the top again in frustration. Was happy with the result since HBK needed a long run to establish himself, and Vader was better as a heel monster challenger. Overall, a good pay-per-view that set up some interesting things to come for the latter part of the year.
BJ Moore, good show. WWF had a lot of momentum this time compared to the terrible 95. I would have loved to see Vader take the strap here, although I did like Shawn. I was a huge Brett mark. Love to see Vader as the monster heel champ like in WCW. Also, I would have enjoyed if they would have maybe had maybe one of the two IC tourney matches here on the card to show importance of the belt. Maybe Owen Savio or Merrow Goldust could have been first round matches, like Irv C suggested. Anyways, great show, and am I the only one that kind of dug the New Rockers? No, I dug them as well, BJ. And I do like the idea that him and Irv raised about having the IC tourney here as well.
Mm. Dennis Nunez, this show never seems to click for me for some reason. There's nothing wrong with it. All the matches are solid and the last two are the best. Just never seems to gel together for some reason and the show kind of just sits there. The Boiler Room Brawl is great, although it does drag a lot in the first half and kills the pacing somewhat. Paul Bearer turning on Taker was a great heel turn, yet a bit nonsensical too. I didn't really get Paul's reason for leaving the dead man behind, just because, I guess. Sean vs. Vader is solid, but Sean screaming and kicking Vader in the fucking head is inexcusable and ranks up there in Sean's top moments of douchebaggery. I'm surprised Vader didn't try to break his nose or bust him open hard way. I think the belt should have changed hands on this night, and Sean could have gotten it back a couple Raws later, but the diva gets his way once again.
Michael McDonald, Mr. Doobie Brother himself. Daddy, why did you lose to Jerry Lawler? Even Aldo Montoya beat him, Daddy. Fuck you, Daddy. You need Mark Henry to save you? No one needs Mark Henry. Otherwise, a pretty damn cool show. I dug the four-way tag match just a bit more than anyone should. Savio Owen were solid, and Sid gets the Duke over Punisher of Perverts, Davey Boy Smith. I know Sean cracks the sads, too, but otherwise, it's a pretty good main event. Boiler Room Brawl, however, is fantastic. They beat the shit out of each other to the point where Taker suffered such a severe injury infection of his arm that at one point they thought had to consider the thought of amputation. Barrett turning on Undertaker is a memorable moment no one really thought would happen.
I think Michael McDonald's expecting you to say pervert, though.
Pervert!
Thank you.
Also said, screw that overrated hose beast Sable. Sunny Marlene in swimsuits means you're going to have a good time. Just like the Potty Rock.
Yes. Sean Z. Pretty good show, opened by Owen and Savio, and it's a decent little match. Owen was just awesome as the chicken shit heel and still using the cast. I don't think Savio gets enough credit for the work he did as a face in 95 and 96. Entertaining way to open the show. The tag match was blah and boring to me. I really like Bulldog Sid, and it was a good power match between these two and really showed how powerful Bulldog was, too. By the way, he was just picking Sid up for power slams and the delayed suplex. Sid was so over, it was crazy. Goldust Mero was solid but not spectacular. Mero moved pretty well before the knee injury. Lawler Jake was more of an angle than a match. And I didn't really care for Jake in this run. Taker Mankind was a good brawl where they just beat the hell out of each other. The turn at the end was a good way to freshen up Bearer and add another element to Mankind. It also added another twist to this awesome feud. The main event was awesome. Vader was just a monster, and Michaels was having good matches with everyone. Besides Michaels' tantrum, this was a great match. I kind of wish Vader won and had Michaels chase again. And this was really the high point of Vader's WWF run, which was kind of sad. Either way, good match. Overall, it's a pretty good show for the WWF. Consider this. Diesel and Ramon had just left for WCW. Bret Hart was out until the Survivor Series, and the WWF had a bunch of new faces coming in. If you looked at the roster from the year before to now, you would see a bunch of new faces. Into the summer, though, these guys were starting to establish themselves. Guys like Mankind, Vader, Bulldog, and Owen, plus Austin would blow up soon. Bret Hart would be coming back. Things started clicking, and it's a good thing that they did because WCW was starting to catch fire with the NWO. If it wasn't for Michaels and these new stars, WWE might not even be around today.
And finally, the master of the lube, Karen Polland. This edition of SummerSlam is a fun little jaunt that features many of the stars that would become important over the coming months. Austin Yoko's all right for the length of time it's given, but I can't help but feel the finish with Yoko ripping off the ropes is a bit of a burial, considering how Vince, Jim Ross, and Perfect kept riffing on Yoko about how much he weighed and how much he ate that day. The opener was just two guys going in there and doing what they do best, and it was nice to see a Bradshaw cameo in the process. I actually find the tag title match a decent match. It's not the greatest, but I wouldn't say it's the worst. Tag division will get a much-needed boost the next month. Sid Bulldog was fun, and I kind of wish it went on for a couple more minutes. Goldust Mero's a good match as well, although it's weird that Mero debuts his new finisher, and Jim Ross have been pimping it all match, yet doesn't even get the win. Very strange decision there. Jake Lawler was crap, and it sucks that in reality Jake had relapsed at this time. Just a poor decision to have the storyline air, really. The Boiler Room Brawl is tremendous, and the shocking turn of Paul Bearer leaves the fans wondering as to whether or not Taker can ever defeat Mankind. The one thing I remember most about this match is Mankind taking a sick bump in the back of his head from the apron onto the concrete. Just a nasty fall, one that makes me glad concussion and brain issues are more prominent nowadays. Main event's tremendous, and I can see why some people would get annoyed by multiple finishes. At least it keeps Vader somewhat strong. Sean shouldn't have pissed and moaned about Vader not being in position for his elbow. You're the top guy of the promotion, you should act like it. Can you imagine Bret, Austin, Cena, Hogan, or hell, even Warrior acting like that? I sure don't. Overall, a fun show that tends to get overlooked in terms of good SummerSlams. So there you have it. There's all your feedback. There's our review of SummerSlam 96. We hope you enjoyed it. As always, we're going to lock the vault back up for another week.
Yes.
And that is it for us this week. Scott, hope you enjoyed our two shows.
Yes. Yeah, and I tell you, like I said, the feedback went up and down. Some people really liked the show, some people really hated the show. It's one of those kind of shows.
And of course, Jason Greenhouse has given us our new name for our Wednesday night, well, usual Wednesday night shows, and that is the, what is it, PTB Summer Flashbacks?
Summer Throwback.
Summer Throwback, that's what it is.
Summer Throwback, yes.
So I like it, so we'll roll with that. We're still not 100% sure what we will be delivering to you as a review next Wednesday for Out of the Chronology. Next week we'll be back though with Mind Games, we do know that. And on Wednesday we'll come up with something good. And we'll share it with you and put the feedback up over the weekend. So have a great weekend, Place to Be Nation. Thank you for listening. As always, visit us at Bigelow34.probers.com. Please sign up for the trivia tournament if you haven't done so yet. You're going to get a good little prize pack. You're going to get to appear on the show. I think we got 19 people. We'd like to get to 24. So if there's five more of you that haven't signed up, please do. And we want to start. We're looking to start that up probably the week after 4th of July. And Scott and I have been working on the questions, and we got some doozies. So start studying.
Yes.
Visit us on Facebook, Place to Be Podcast, on Twitter, Place Number 2B Podcast as well. And with all that said, for Scott, I'm Justin. Have a good weekend, Place to Be Nation. We will talk to you next week.
Daddy, where's my pool of pudding?
Man.
Soldiers and Nixon's coming.